gentlemen, welcome back. Thank you so much for tuning in live. If you are joining us live, dlive.tv/redicetv or redicetv/live. Maybe you're tuning in through VK or Twitter as well. Welcome to you all. It's great to have you with us here this evening, or maybe, well, early morning hours, almost going into, a little bit past 2 a.m. Wednesday. Over in on Central European Time. We might be tuning in later, of course, in the archives, BitChute crowd, podcast crowd, or maybe on redicemembers.com, redice.tv, however you're joining us. Thank you so much. It's great to have you here. Now, we're going to break down here today a very interesting and important situation when it comes to this peace deal that we saw President Trump, in connection with Benjamin Netanyahu today, present in the White House when it comes to the Israeli Palestinian conflict, right? Trump was going to be the president that's going to solve this major issue of bringing peace between Israel and Palestine. He's a president that handles deals, after all, so he says, right? So I watched the press conference earlier here today, and we're going to go through kind of the bring out some of the highlights from the presentation here, both what Trump has to say, hear what Netanyahu has to say, talk about that, kind of discuss what they mean, what it looks like. They've Trump tweeted out a map as well that we're going to take a look at. And then we have much more actually coming after that too. We have Adam Green with us who's made a reel for us. So that's another portion we're going to get into in connection, of course, to this topic of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. So, Adam, great to have you back again. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Awesome. Great to see you again. Thank you for coming on short notice as well. I wasn't aware that it was that presentation was today. I just tuned in. I saw it, got a notification on it on YouTube, and it's like, oh, I got to see this. It was like this morning sometime, I think 10 a.m., 11 something. Wow, I couldn't believe what I was hearing here. Pretty bold stuff. Now, before we just kind of dive in and just take a look at the press conference, anything you'd like to say or open with or make our audience aware of before we listen to what these gentlemen has to say about this.
We might as well just get into it.
Yeah. All right. Let's do it, folks. So I have a couple of excerpts here. Here we go. We'll stop in between and probably make some comments here as well. But here we go.
Extremism are everyone's common enemy. Yesterday, I had the pleasure of meeting with both the Prime Minister of Israel and a man that's working very hard to become the Prime Minister of Israel in the longest-running election of all time, Benny Gantz of the Blue and White Party. And both leaders joined me to express their support for this effort, proving that the State of Israel looking for peace and that peace transcends politics by any measure, unmeasurable. That's what they want. On my first trip overseas as president, I visited the Holy Land of Israel. I was deeply moved and amazed by what this small country had achieved in the face of overwhelming odds and never-ending threats. The State of Israel comprises only a minuscule amount of land in the Middle East, and yet it has become a thriving center of democracy, innovation, culture, and commerce. Israel is a light unto the world. The hearts and history of our people are woven together. The land of Israel is an ancient home, a sacred place of worship, and a solemn promise to the Jewish people that we will never again repeat history's darkest hour.
All right. So, as he said, first state visit that he did abroad was, of course, to Israel to give a little nod and recognition of who's paying the bills over there in the White House. And then, of course, they have to repeat these mantras as well, worth to bring out. It's always this, the only democracy in the Middle East. It's a light unto the nations. They always have to, you know, there's certain things that they always have to kind of repeat and go on after. And so that's how Trump opens up pretty strong with the memes, I'd say, the Israeli memes.
Yeah, the light unto the nations is just like their prophecy guide that they think they're going to heal the world with Tikkun Olam and you know, lead us into the messianic age where the Gentiles basically serve them as good Noahides.
All right, let's continue.
And how our cultures are woven together,
yeah, yes,
you know, this
exactly.
Unbreakable bond, this alliance. It's just like, just nauseating, really.
Yeah, and it returns to that a little bit later, too, in terms of the biblical stuff. Let's pick up from here now.
Prosperity and a brighter future for the Israelis and Palestinians. This vision for peace is fundamentally different from past proposals. In the past, even the most well-intentioned plans were light on factual details and heavy on conceptual frameworks. By contrast, our plan is 80 pages and is the most detailed proposal ever put forward by far. As I have seen throughout my long career as a deal maker, complex problems require nuanced, fact-based remedies. That is why our proposal provides precise technical solutions to make Israelis, Palestinians, and the region safer and much more prosperous. My vision presents a win-win opportunity for both sides, a realistic two-state solution that resolves the risk of Palestinian statehood to Israel's security. Today, Israel has taken a giant step toward peace. Yesterday, Prime Minister Netanyahu informed me that he is willing to endorse the vision as the basis for direct negotiations, and I will say the general also endorsed, and very strongly, with the Palestinians, a historic breakthrough. And likewise...
Okay, I can pause that. Yeah, so he claims 80 pages. It's all kind of outlined a little bit later. He actually says, we'll churn out the details. Kind of don't worry about it. I haven't gone through the whole thing yet. Here it is. Here's a copy of it. Peace to Prosperity. Trump released a map as well on Twitter today. We'll take a look at that a little bit later, too. But, of course, this only makes sense, if you will, Adam, if you take into account that Trump, not Trump, but the whole situation with Israel, I should say, that they already aren't on, like, stolen land. You know what I mean? That they have, since 1948, somehow just always been there. That they're starting with the outlook, like, from today and say, well, we have a two-state solution. While the anger, of course, from Palestine comes from, no, you stole that land. And that's why we're angry. Why are we going to accept this now all of a sudden? Like, oh, okay, well, you take this piece and we take this piece. They've continuously lost land, as we'll see later, too.
It's just an insult to the whole world. They're calling it a win-win situation.
Win-win.
There are no Palestinians involved. There's no Palestinians.
No representative there. Exactly.
Yeah, like they're making a peace deal, but there's not even a Palestinian there to even like shake hands and take the photos,
nope.
Like the Camp David Accords. And also notice he said a fact base. So like I guess the fact is that they believe God gave it to them, so that's the fact that matters. And he also says the risk of a Palestinian state to Israel's security.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a tweet in my compilation of Trump tweeting about the Palestinian statehood, which we'll get to later on.
All right, let's continue. A lot to break down here, but good points.
We have really a situation having to do with...
Actually, let me do this. I forgot to skip forward a little bit. 7:12, I'm going to go up to here now. Let's start right here. Here we go.
This is the first time Israel has authorized the release of a conceptual map illustrating the territorial compromises it's willing to make for the cause of peace, and they've gone a long way. This is an unprecedented and highly significant development. Mr. Prime Minister, thank you for having the courage to take this bold step forward.
So bold, so brave.
What's the risks involved here? I mean, this is ludicrous, right?
They're acting like they're making sacrifices.
Right.
Great job, everybody. So many claps and so many thank yous and stuff. And it's just like, they're making it seem like, oh, the Palestinians better take this deal. They know that the Palestinians aren't going to do this screw job.
Oh, it's wonderful when they get to the economy and the GDP and jobs and stuff like that, that they try to say it's obviously an extortion, right? It's you better accept this and we're going to do it anyway. That's clear, right? But as you say, that this somehow is a risk to Netanyahu or Israel, that they're going out on a limb here?
I mean, they just invert the truth every single time. The truth is the guy that Netanyahu is running against, Gantz, says that he doesn't want the plan released because it's going to help Netanyahu. And just like, and you know, all that's happened before this too, with the Golan Heights and Jerusalem,
yes,
and talking about annexing the West Bank and pulling out of the Iran deal. It's just like, giving them everything and pretending like they're being so gracious. It's just disgusting.
Yeah, and that's a good point you mentioned that. I forgot to mention that in the beginning, but it seems almost also like Trump is actually doing Netanyahu a favor here. We have an election coming up what, March 2nd, I believe, in Israel. It's been a tight race. Netanyahu needs something over his opponent to kind of show, well, I have influence over America. I can make sure that America comes to our side, right? That's what I feel that this is.
The last time he was running, I got the clip of it. Netanyahu says, yes, this relationship that I have with Trump, and we got to leverage this like as an asset, basically. Just kind of bragging to his people, like, vote for me because I control Trump in America, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
Which he's bragged about on secret recordings as well. We have 80% support, and they're easily moved, and don't worry about the Americans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And many times he's referenced this and said the power of America and, you know, you hold big sway in the world and you're such great friends. He goes on a love bombing campaign here later of Trump. Anyway, let's proceed.
We have a lot of powerful people in this room, a lot of the people that can help make it work. So that's quite a thunderous applause.
There's a trope. Powerful Jews.
Yep.
Not allowed to say that.
I saved it for that reason. Like, oh, a lot of powerful people in the room. But again, yeah. There's no representative from the Palestinians. There's no, I think, even Arab in the room. So, you know,
they couldn't even find one like compromise bought off person to go along.
Not even a bought off person. It's hilarious. Exactly. All right. 8:45. I'm going to skip forward a little bit here. All right. Take it from here.
We will also work to create a contiguous territory within the future Palestinian state. For when the conditions for statehood are met, including the firm rejection of terrorism.
When the conditions of statehood is met. Now, that's very important. That's absolute key in this. And I don't know what those exactly those conditions are. I'll have to wade through the entire document later from the White House to see if anything is in there. But obviously, this is a kind of an extortion campaign, I would assume. And he goes a little bit more detail into this later on when he talks about that, what they call funding of terrorism and things like that, like a Hamas, that all of that has to stop. You have to just do away with all that stuff. And you have to meet all these conditions for us to basically say, well, OK, we'll recognize you as a state now. But essentially, it will be a crippled state that is 100% dependent both on Israel, but also on America and their mm-hmm. their demands, essentially.
Yeah, not real sovereignty. They're not allowed to have any type of military. They're going to be basically still occupied and under Israel's security. And the way they're setting it up, it's like, well, you can have a state and we have this great deal. But if you do any violence or there's any one missile, even though if nobody takes credit for it, or if there's attack anywhere, then, you know, the whole deal scratched and you guys screwed up. I don't know if you've seen Kushner on CNN. It was just out a little bit. A few minutes ago, but I have it in my compilation.
Okay, interesting. We might have to watch that too. Oh, you got it in the compilation. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, gotcha. Perfect. Exactly. Again, underlining that point, you will be a state dependent on others while they say, well, national sovereignty, you'll have all these things. But again, as you say, no military, no defense to speak of, nothing like that. It's essentially a capitulation document, it seems like, at this stage. All right, let's proceed here. 9:10. Okay, let's take it from here.
Jerusalem will remain Israel's undivided. Very important.
Oh, I miswrote that word. He says Jerusalem. Let me go back to this. We can hear that. That's important. Right there. This player is a little bit tricky. Here we go. Let's take it from here.
Under this vision, Jerusalem will remain Israel's undivided, very important, undivided capital.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
So I wonder what he means by that. That makes it sound like they get all of Jerusalem or
yes.
they get all of the Temple Mount. But they've also said that there's going to be an embassy for the Palestinians in East Jerusalem. So I'm wondering if they're going to like move the line more to the east so that it's the Jews have all of Jerusalem, if that's
yes.
what he means by undivided.
That's what I figured as well. Eastern means probably it's going to be some suburb area, which is newly built something. They have America built some mm-hmm. kind of embassy over there. But again, although they claim, well, we'll make the religious sites accessible mm-hmm. to everybody, Muslims and Christians and Jews and all that stuff. The importance is that they own and control this territory for the future building of the temple. That's what this is about. Yeah. That's why Jerusalem is so important to them.
Because there's Jerusalem, and then smaller in Jerusalem, there's the Old City, which yes. right now it's divided into fours, like a Jewish quarter, Armenian quarter, and a Muslim quarter. So I think they want to get control of all of that so they can control the Temple Mount.
Yeah, I believe so as well. Let's see if there was anything else right at the end of this clip here. Okay, no, it was just applause. It just keeps going and going. That's why.
It's
just
like, so much thunderous applause.
And of course, you already gave them the Trump Heights, as they call it now, right? The Golan Heights. Mm-hmm. He's given them so many things already. And then they released this document and claimed, see, look at how much Israel is sacrificing for this. It's, as you said, a complete inversion.
Imagine if all this time they spent with, you know, like Ben Shapiro says, all of Trump's policy advisors are Jewish. All this time they spent, Kushner, his top advisor that's doing all this stuff for Israel, if this was spent on America and America first, any minute spent on Israel is taking away energy and resources for America.
That's right. Hundreds of thousands of Americans are jobless. Millions are jobless. Hundreds of thousands are dying on opioid overdoses, and he actually gives out a number a little bit later of what he intends to give to the Palestinians, something like, I think it was something like 500 million or something, which is bad in itself. But
50
look,
billion, I think it was.
Oh, was it that much? Oh, gee.
Yeah. This is okay. Also a scam for them to make money, too. You know, this is it's padding all of their pockets.
Yep. Yeah. It is coming up, and I think, exactly. And there's something with this deal in terms of like, the labor force that they're seeking to turn Palestinians into a labor force, a proxy subset essentially of Israel, giving them the illusion that they have statehood. But again, Hamas, all their defenses, all of that's going to be taken away. We're going to pour money all over you guys, but it's essentially just to build like factories so they can become little worker ants for Israel. That's what I think this is.
And on that, the quote from Abbas, the president of the PLO, says, Jerusalem is not for sale. Your conspiracy deal will not pass. That's what he says.
Interesting.
Quote.
All right, let's keep going here.
There's a lot of spirit in this room. It's true. You don't
Holy
see it
Spirit.
You don't see
exactly. There is a kind of a
God is with us.
Yeah, it's an incantation. There's something always with this in the air. When you know it's true.
Prophecy
he's a salesman.
Being fulfilled.
Yeah, and wait until, of course, you guys hear when Netanyahu steps up there. You'll hear how he views this from a historical perspective too. A little bit more.
Therefore,
from this section
it is
here.
Only reasonable that I have to do a lot for the Palestinians, or it just wouldn't be fair. Now, don't clap for that.
Don't clap for that.
They weren't clapping.
No.
They're like, wait, don't even say the P word.
We have to give something to them? What? I don't follow this. It's going to be a great deal for us, but do we have to give anything to them? Which, as we'll see, will be nothing.
It wouldn't be fair. I want this deal to be a great deal for the Palestinians. It has to be. Today's agreement is a historic opportunity for the Palestinians to finally achieve an independent state of their very own.
And my notes, and you already mentioned this, but of course, and yet no representative from Palestine is there, right?
So it's like, and they're already all denying it, saying this is a crappy deal. They're rioting apparently already in the streets.
Yeah, we'll show some footage of that here a little bit. I saw you retweeting that. Unbelievable. Okay, 14... What do we have here? 1408. Can we back up a little bit? This player is a bit sensitive. Unfortunately, it doesn't allow me to get it. Here we go. Let's check it out.
But we must break free of yesterday's failed approaches.
Okay, here
this
from here.
This map will more than double the Palestinian territory and provide a Palestinian capital in eastern Jerusalem where
That's
America
right.
will proudly open an embassy.
Can you pause it real quick?
Yep.
He says it's going to double the Palestinians' area. We see the map. It's like less than ever.
Let's show it now, folks, and then we can compare that, and we'll go back to the clips here in a little bit. But here's the map that Trump tweeted out, right? So I don't see much more territory than what's there today.
Probably down there on the south by the border of Egypt. I don't think they have that land right now. So they're giving them some desert for high-tech manufacturing.
So below the West Bank right there, right? Or below Gaza.
Yes, below Gaza.
Yeah, that's right. If we look at this map, let me pull this up here. This is, of course, a famous one of how they've lost territory since 1946, incrementally losing more and more and more. Latest image on the right there is from 2011 or so. But if we compare that, the latest snapshot, if you will, to this, then, yep, you're absolutely right. It's in the western parts down there.
What kind of state is surrounded by a foreign occupier, divided with an underground tunnel
yeah.
and full of little enclaves where all the illegal settlements are? I mean, right. Why would they not accept this? And then when they reject it, they're going to be like, well, you had your chance. Now you're going to be destroyed.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. It's going to be, well, they don't want peace. They don't want it. They're a warring, savage people. They don't want peace, you know, again. And I'm not, you know, this whole thing with like, you know, I'm actually, globally speaking, I'm a nationalist for everybody, right? I want every people to have a nation. I think that that's better. But the point is, this, imagine, you know, for those of you out there who might, you know, be against that, they're like, well, where are the Jews going to have their homeland kind of thing? This would be like in 80 years, 100 years from now. Swedes are a minority in our own country, and it's a Muslim country, and Swedes are beginning to fight and war to take their country back, essentially, right? Mm-hmm. And we have these small enclaves. We have, you know, certain areas in northern Sweden. We have some down in the central parts and stuff like that. And then the Muslims in Sweden says, well, we're going to offer you this peace deal. Here you go. You can get to keep some of these territory that you're already in, essentially. That would be the equivalent. A little bit different, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, if we're for nationalism, we should be for 1948 Palestinian nationalism.
Right.
Balfour Declaration doesn't have the right to give the Jews land that he doesn't have, basically, although they had the British mandate, but still, it was a total screw job with Zionists, you know, pulling the strings behind the scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. Balfour there.
And they lied
thing.
Every step along the way, too.
Absolutely. All right, let's go back to the clip here. Let me just make sure I have the right time code again, folks. 1419. Okay, there might have been a little bit more from that. Let's continue there.
No Palestinians or Israelis will be uprooted from their homes.
Oh, that's a good one. Well, they already have Trump. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. It's like, mm-hmm. No one will be uprooted. You mean, is that from before, after you, Trump Heights then, or Golan Heights? Is that before the illegal settlements? Is that what time scale are we talking about here? Because all the Palestinians have already been uprooted, essentially, right? So, again, it's this illusion to claim that they're Israel is sacrificing a tremendous amount to deliver this deal here, right?
They bulldoze their homes. They won't allow Palestinians permits to build new homes while they give them all out for all the settlements. But yeah, go ahead and continue.
All right, 1459, I believe I had. Let me see here. 1459. Okay, let's take it from here.
Al-Aqsa Mosque will be able to do so. This is a major statement.
Al-Aqsa.
This is a major import.
He says the United Arab Emeritus. He says letter to instead of the Emirate.
Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Al-Aqsa Mosque. Let's take that again. That's funny.
He's on Adderall or whatever.
No Palestinians or Israelis will be uprooted from their homes.
Yeah, we took that already, but you know, big lie.
Israel will work closely with a wonderful person, a wonderful man, the King of Jordan, to ensure that the status quo of the Temple Mount is preserved and strong measures are taken to ensure that all Muslims who wish to visit peacefully and pray at the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Is that
Al-Aqsa.
I mean, it's fine, but you know, yeah. It's the point.
And he says the Jordan King says that the Temple Mount is a red line. He said that before. And also he just out today, he says Jordan warns, quote, dangerous consequences to unilateral Israeli action. Mm. And it's another article they're keeping the status quo, except now they're allowed to go pray on the Temple Mount around the Dome in Al-Aqsa, which they have been doing. They've been storming it with the IDF and stuff and making these big demonstrations, and there's been clashes.
Yeah.
Couple years.
Do you know if like the king, the royals of Jordan, are they like Wahhabi or something? Or do you know what they are?
No, I've heard.
Salafist or something? Or
No, I've heard rumors that they're Muslim Brotherhood or Freemasons, but it seems like, you know, he's in protecting the holy sites there, so okay. I don't think he wants to give up that responsibility.
I would just assume that Trump and the U.S. and Israel, ultimately, who pulls the strings here, the Israeli lobby in America, would allow to give this up over to someone who is not in their control or under their thumb. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
They've guarded it for a long. They've been the custodians of the holy sites for centuries.
Okay. All right. Interesting. A little bit more here on this clip.
We'll be able to do so. This is a major statement. This is of major importance. And at the same time, our vision will deliver a massive commercial investment of $50 billion into the new Palestinian state. You have many, many countries that want to partake in this, and many of them are surrounding. They all want this to happen. Virtually every one of them want this to happen, and I think, Bibi, you know that very well. You're going to have tremendous support from your neighbors and beyond your neighbors. Over the next 10 years, if executed well, 1 million great new Palestinian jobs will be created. Mm-hmm. Their poverty rate will be cut in half, and their poverty rate is unacceptable now and only getting worse.
Well,
their
I wonder
GDP
why.
GDP will double and triple, and much-needed hope, joy, opportunity, and prosperity will finally arrive for the Palestinian people. Our vision will end the cycle of Palestinian dependency upon charity and foreign aid. They will be doing phenomenally all by themselves. They are a very, very...
Yet he's
what about
offering
Israel's
them.
Dependence on our foreign aid?
Well, exactly. That too. Absolutely. And I mean, look at how much money they get from Germany each year. There's other countries that they get Holocaust money from and things like that. But again, he just said you're going to give them $50 billion. How is that not being in a position of aid? Or getting money and being someone else's bitch, essentially, right? You do what we tell you to do. Here's $50 billion bucks. Give up XYZ and we'll tell you what to do.
Yeah, right? Like an economic hitman. You know, the IMF gives you a loan and then you're just enslaved and indebted to the whims of whatever they want.
Yeah. And again, I think there is something to that issue that you say, that this might very well be... They might try to interface this with Israel's high-tech industry somehow, or some kind of production jobs for Israel, building a new facilities or industries or something like that. That's again under the control of Israel, but ultimately, yes, Palestinians work there; they get salaries working there and stuff. But it would be kind of a glorified. Sure, we're all kind of wage slaves in one way or another, right? But do you see what I'm saying? Though it's like. There could be something that ties into this issue of like Israel is this new power in the region and they're going to need a workforce and they've been trying to work this out. Like, why don't we just tie these guys in and let them work for us instead or something, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And then the people that own it and invested, they're the ones that are just going to be padding their pockets. Like Adelson was there, front row. I'm sure he's and Kushner's probably going to be making money off all this for, you know, decades to come. If any of it happens, I think they're going to reject it and we're not going to see any of this transpire.
Well, they did mention, we'll listen to that too, but they did mention we'll move ahead with this. That's basically what they've said. So we'll see how that turns out. All right, going to skip forward a little bit here. 1622. All right, from here.
To ensure a successful Palestinian state, we are asking the Palestinians to meet the challenges of peaceful coexistence. This includes adopting basic laws enshrining human rights, protecting against financial and political corruption, stopping the malign activities of Hamas.
Can you pause? I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Netanyahu is literally indicted right now for corruption charges, and he's lecturing the Palestinians. And I'm not saying they're angels and they don't have corruption too, but just, you know.
Yeah, no, it is funny. But again, what does this mean? This means... Join the army of global homo, right? That's what this means. It means you get in with the trans flags and the gay rights and, you know, whatever, right? Everything that we tell you, this is what has happened with virtually every country that America has invaded, going way back. It's like they have their own way. All of a sudden, you know, like Iraq, they come in and they, you know, set up a World Bank. They take control of the financial institutions, which, by the way, then have the accounts at the New York Fed, for example. You know, it's like, so they're obviously under the control of American global, I should say, financial interests. But it's except our laws, get these things in place, adhere to the international community, which essentially means global homo. That's what I see here anyway.
Islamic Jihad and other enemies of peace. Ending the incitement of hatred against Israel, so important, and permanently halting the financial compensation to terrorists.
Yeah, right. So that's what I'm talking about.
They act like they just hate them for no reason at all whatsoever. They stole their land. They're bulldozing their homes. You know, they're oppressing their human rights. And they just, it's, oh, they hate him. It's like,
yeah,
you know, it's just like they use hate speech all the time here.
We hear this too when it comes to, you know, looking at World War II history specifically, obviously, but just European anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. It is, in 99% of the cases, it's essentially the argument is, well, for some reason, these dumb Europeans just have like out of control anti-Semitism, and it has nothing to do with actual behavior that has a backlash. That just, that doesn't come into the equation at all. And it's the same thing here, obviously. The Palestinians just hate Israel. They don't want peace. We're offering them all these things, but it's like, well, you've still taken their land. Like, that's why they're angry. Is that so difficult to understand? But they're, as you say, they're just pretending that's not part of the equation. Mm-hmm.
It's never anything they did. They've just been, it's the ancient hate, the disease that infects all the Gentiles. They've just hated them since the beginning of time, everywhere they've gone for no reason whatsoever. And to even bring up the issue that it could be their behavior, their actions, it's just, oh, that's hate and you're just an anti-Semite.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's go forward to 18 here. Let's see, right here.
Achieve the criteria for statehood and become a truly independent and wonderful state.
Independent.
President Ryan. Abbas, I want you to know that if you choose the path to peace, America and many other countries, we will be there. We will be there to help you in so many different ways. And we will be there every step of the way. We will be there to help.
We will be there to help. Now, Abbas was not there, right? They did speak to him through press conference, essentially, through you know, some kind of can and wire, you know, kind of way here. It's like, why couldn't they have any representative there? If this is such a great deal and they would be dumb to not accept it, they should be able to get an ambassador there or some representative to say, yeah, it looks pretty good, you know, we'll see. But they couldn't even get that, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
All right, going forward, another 10 seconds, 18:30 from here.
In other words, for the first time in many, many decades, I can say it will work. It's going to work. If they do this, it will work.
If they accept our way of running their country, it's going to work. Trust me. It's just, I wanted that in there too, so you guys can hear what preposterous things. All right, I'm going to skip forward a little bit here to 23:57. It's kind of the end of the Trump segment here before Netanyahu comes in, and his segment is just, wow. Okay, 23, what do we have here in the notes? 23:57, guys, so let's move forward here a little bit. All right, from here, there we go.
Elders in the region. There are many Muslims who never visited Al-Aqsa, and many Christians and Jews who never visited the holy sites in the West Bank described so vividly in the Bible. My vision will change that. Our majestic biblical heritage will be able to live, breathe, and flourish in modern times. All humanity should be able to enjoy the glories of the Holy Land. This part of the world is forever connected to the human soul and the human spirit. These ancient lands should not be symbols of conflict, but eternal symbols of peace. Thank you again for all of the work you've all done. And
anyway, he goes on there to congratulate everybody for such a great job. But yeah, I just want to include that too, that it's like...
That was well written. It sounded good. But it sounds like they just want to take control of all the sites so they can dictate things by their terms. And it's like, the Palestinians better accept it or else.
Right, right. And also, that's what I was going to say, the biblical thing, that it's a continuously kind of... Obviously, this issue is hinging on the Christian Zionist element and the evangelical element in America, too, that have been very supportive of Trump, that you got to continuously kind of invoke, like, this is prophecy. And I saw that in the comments when I looked at a couple of different feeds, too. People are in there typing and just like, oh my God, it's like, the, you know, this is the prophecy is coming real, yeah. And Jesus is going to return, Messiah is going to come back. We have to do this, right? And again, it's not operated on any, I mean, for some, sure, maybe, you know, they look at this in a cold-hearted analytical way and say, well, this looks like a good deal, whatever, without looking historically on the situation. But a lot of people are swept up in this in religious fervor and emotion, essentially. That's what I would say.
Yeah, and all the Christians that are going along with this, falling for this, you know, nice, well-written speech here about the holy sites and our shared traditions and stuff, they hate Christians. Just in, there was an article this week, there's rabbis at Auschwitz saying, remove this church, you know, there can't be a church here. They burn down churches in Israel, they vandalize them. They consider the Chabad Lubavitchers around Trump and Netanyahu, they consider Christianity idol worship, punishable by decapitation in the Messianic age. If you don't become convert and become a Noahide and give up your, worshiping Jesus.
And again, from the Christian perspective, the one who is going to unify the world and bring peace and all that, so that's the Antichrist. It's the Antichrist that's going to do that. So, and I know that there's this eschatological faction of Christianity, that see, I guess, that as kind of as a necessary evil of one of these purging steps that you just have to go through to get to the next step where I assume the real Jesus will show up or something like that, right? But it's the point that it's even the prophecies talking about that this is a, not from the Jews' point of view, Judaism, but from Christians, it's like it's the Antichrist that's going to sit on that throne in Jerusalem. For the Jews, though, that's going to be the Moshiach, the Messiah, the Savior, right?
And we're talking the highest levels of power, the White House, you know, the leader of the free world is up there going along with this, you know, I'm chosen. The rabbi of Ukraine said that he was the Messiah, that he's saving the Jews. It's just like prophecy is dictating all of our foreign policy and our, you know, our subordinates to a foreign state.
Yeah. All right, let's listen to Netanyahu here and see what he has to say about all this. He is also goes through, I think it's about 8 points. It's right at the end here of this segment with the clips, which I think is very important because he outlines a couple of, you know, real distinct things of what they want to have achieved. But anyway, this is how he opens up. Long dramatic pause here in the beginning.
In the Middle East, we drink water before a long voyage.
Very deep. This is all symbolic, folks. It's not an accident. It's a lot. We're going to go on a long voyage now, ladies and gentlemen, of prophecy here.
This is an extraordinary voyage. President Trump, Donald.
Dawn.
I'm honored to be here today, along with my wife, Sarah. Minister Yariv Levin, Ambassador Ron Dermer. Ron, thank you for everything you've been doing.
So many claps. Like, they should just hand out an award to everybody.
Yeah, everyone is doing such great work. A lot of clapping and patting each other on the back. And you know. Yeah.
National Security Advisor Meir Ben-Shabbat. Thank you too, Meir. And our entire delegation. We are honored to be here with you, Mr. President, with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. We applaud you, Mike.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
Secretary of the Treasury Steve Mnuchin, National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien, America's UN Ambassador Kelly Kraft, Jared Kushner, and Ivanka. It's good to see you both.
Oh, yeah.
Something happened to the audio?
Is it much lower? Should be fine.
It's good to see the unfailingly energetic and optimistic Ambassador David Friedman, Jason Greenblatt, Avi Berkowitz, Brian Hook, and the rest of your exceptional peace pan, Mr. President.
Now, there, I just want to pause there. Of the people he mentioned, There's a couple of names I don't know. Okay, I just looked up one, Robert Kraft. He's also Jewish. There's 13 people he mentioned, 11 of those are Jewish. And these are the people, the team that have been working on this issue. Like, I'm sure it's not going to be any bias here. It's going to be a solely objective exercise in trying to create peace between Palestine and Israel, right?
Yeah, he listed Avi Berkowitz. I've done several videos on him. That's Kushner's assistant. And all they're not just Jewish, but they're ultra-Orthodox, very tied in with Chabad Lubavitch. Many of them have funded and support all the illegal settlements in the West Bank. So we're talking the extreme Zionist.
Interesting. All right, let's see my notes here. I'm sure there was more. Yeah, he opens up here. There's a longer segment to 12. Actually, no, that was about it. Those he referenced there, yeah, to 29:12. Okay, let me skip forward a little bit here to about 30:13. We'll take it from there. All right, right about here.
Other distinguished guests who are here today, this is a historic day. And it recalls another historic day. We remember May 14th, 1948, because on that day, President Truman became the first world leader to recognize the State of Israel after our first Prime Minister, David Ben-Gurion, declared our independence. That day charted a brilliant future. Mr. President,
it's been chaos.
Down the decades.
Was that?
He said it's been a brilliant future. It's been chaos in the Middle East since they set up their Zionist state.
Absolutely. And, of course, Truman, 33rd degree Mason, bears to be repeated, all these things. A lot of these boys are playing completely different clubs than most of us do. And you know, Freemasonry, of course, have kind of been described by some, including some rabbis, that it's essentially Judaism for the Goyim. That's essentially what it is. It also ropes them up into a mythology that is centered instead of our European traditions on a Middle Eastern Israeli Hebrew tradition, if you will.
Kabbalah and rebuilding Solomon's temple.
Solomon, exactly. What's the, and I used to study this and do shows on this all the time, but Hiram Abiff, all of these are biblical Judaic characters that are central to the mythology in Freemasonry, and it kind of entraps them into this, mythology, really, where they think they become live participants in creating prophecy, right? Freemasonry is a very effective tool to use, I think, so.
The 21st degree in Freemasonry is called a Noahide, like
the Noahide laws. Which degree? 21st?
21st, I believe.
21st, yeah. And, of course, we've shown many times the, Scottish Rite is the 33, and then you have the York Rite, which I think is only 3, and I might get those reversed now, but it's the American branch that were particularly, I guess, just Hebrew in its origin or whatever. Okay, he goes on a little bit more here. Let's play the rest of him.
And perhaps down the centuries, we will also remember January 28th, 2020, because on this day, you became the first world leader to recognize Israel's sovereignty over areas in Judea and Samaria that are vital to our security and central to our heritage.
Now, number of things. Very interesting that he mentions territory as part of heritage, right? Because this is one of the big crimes of supposed white supremacists and things like that that go on and talk about.
He might as well chant blood and soil, right?
That's what it is, right? Tradition, our heritage, it's blood and soil in a different kind of way. And I don't want to be a boomer about this and say, oh, you know, there's real Nazis, you know, there's a little boomerish, but there's a true observance in that fact as well. Again, I'm not against any people having a homeland. I think everyone would be better off, but it's the fact that, well, Palestinians had their homeland and it was there. I mean, these people have been walking around in many different parts of the world for, thousands of years, essentially, right? And then all of a sudden they just return back to a territory which they claim the Bible has, God has given that to them. And of course, that was at the expense and at the detriment of the people that were there at that time.
And I saw a graphic recently that all throughout the history, all the other places that have controlled that area, like Israel or, Israelites only had it for like a very small time in history.
Right, right. No, it's a strategic, geopolitical, important location. That's one of the reasons why they want to have it as well. But if you can anchor that in a biblical narrative, a narrative of prophecy and Jesus and God and all these things, and, you know, it becomes
much
prophecy. Powerful.
It's 100% their religion, why they had to go there and take the land. And also notice he goes, Trump is the first president to recognize this. And it's like, okay, if American president recognizes what you want, you acknowledge it and you accept it and you pretend like it means something. But if we had a different president that said, oh no, you guys are illegal, you'd be like, oh, you have no jurisdiction here. What you say doesn't matter. So they really are just hypocrites.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, note that he's viewing this. What happened today, Netanyahu is viewing this on par with the creation of Israel itself, 1948. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how much this means to not only to him, but to the Jews, right? Of like, and Sumeria. Remember, notice that. The territories in Sumeria and Judea, he says. And I don't know exactly specifically what he's talking about when he says Sumeria. Are you talking about more down towards the Iraq side, or what are you talking about?
They call it that instead of the West Bank to kind of like, you know, say that it's theirs. It's a good point.
Yeah. And again, imagine, as of course, people of European descent, Americans too included, people in Australia, New Zealand, as we lose territory, there's no-go zones, effective colonies that are being created in our countries. If we raise our voice and we are concerned that we are losing territory, things that are tied to our heritage, we're Nazis. We're white supremacists. We're the evil ones for daring to raise these issues. In this case, you can have a representative of a whole country, an illegal settlement, that can stand up at the podium of the White House and espouse the same very talking points, and no one, not a single word, will be raised in the media about that hypocrisy of the comparison of these, right? All right, let's continue here. 31:20. Okay, I think it's just applause after that point, so let's go to 31:46, somewhere around right here.
Trump ought to be wearing an Israeli pin, like on my new shirt. I have him wearing an Israeli pin. It's more
accurate. I want to ask you about the shirt later too. I want to make sure we plug that. We talked about it, right? I mean, he's the first Jewish president, Trump. He was called that by Mark Levin. He's I included that too. Netanyahu talks about what a friend he is to Israel. It's like there's nothing in comparison, he goes on to say.
Greatest friend ever, is what he said.
Absolutely, yep.
Since the moment of its birth, Israel has yearned for peace with our Palestinian neighbors and peace with the broader Arab world.
Is that true or is that a lie? What's going on there?
Complete lie. The Palestinians hear this. They're listening to all this, just going like shaking their heads, like, you really expect us to make a deal with this when they're calling our land Judea and Samaria and just lying about everything.
Why do you think there's like riots right now in Palestine, right, over this? Because this is snake tongue here, just. You know, lies. It's a bunch of lies. And again, it's like, look at the scourge of Zionism upon the other nations, right? Of the Israeli lobby pulling the strings in America, having them literally walk into situations where they lose billions of dollars, trillions on these wars. They lose thousands of their own sons and in some cases daughters too that join the military and sign up to go to war for Israel. Yet Israel is this nation that places stingray devices to snoop on presidents and important politicians. They bomb the USS Liberty and kill American soldiers and then try to cover it up and blame it on other countries. And all of this, this turmoil in the Middle East, the creation of ISIS, the supporting of rebel groups in Syria and Iraq, is what has been the fundamental creation or the reason for the massive migrant waves that we've seen pouring out of the Middle East into Europe. And yes, some of them are not, most of them are not legitimate in the sense that they don't actually come from a country that is at war. They just piggyback on that issue. They piggyback on the Syrian war to use that as an excuse because they're essentially economic migrants. I'm talking about people out of, you know, North Africa, but even Sub-Saharan Africa. Of course, Afghanistan is at war, but a lot of refugees are coming from there. And again, in many cases, for those of you who are concerned about Israel. And well, what are they going to do? And why don't you support them? And, you know, kind of all this talk. There are stories like this that have come out over the years as well, that it's not only the wars that have been created refugees, and then, of course, they go to other countries and go to Europe and stuff like that. In some cases, Israel even directly funds and pays migrants to evacuate Israel and go to other European countries. This is a famous story a couple of years ago where Eritrean migrants were resettled from Israel to Sweden, where Israel paid them money. They paid them $3,500 to never come back to Israel again. Go to Sweden. Go settle up there. And then they have activists, people like Barbara Spector, that have been talking about that Europe must become multicultural. She was working in Sweden at an institute paid for by the Swedish taxpayers. She's received medals from our king in Sweden for her incredible work. She's a vehement Jewish ethnocentric activist, and then she's arguing against so-called racism and Nazism when Swedes begin to fight and push back against the now millions of migrants that are poured into Sweden, as one example, right?
Don't be a bigot, Henrik. Sweden won't survive without it, okay? And she says that she'll be resented for it, and she plays a crucial role. But if we say it, you know, we're anti-Semitic.
I just don't understand how any nationalist who truly has a concern for European nations, and I include all the European diaspora in that, nations that have been created by Europeans, and other nations too, for that matter. But frankly, this is a dilemma between obviously the Middle East, but also, you know, European nations. But that they can't see and they can't follow through on how detrimental Zionism, the Zionist objective, have been to create global turmoil, essentially, and specifically in the West, right? These are intricately tied together. That's the problem that I have with this. I don't have a problem with Jews having a homeland. I have a problem with them using this and this geopolitical game that they're playing in the region, setting up the Belt and Road Initiative, cooperating with all these nations, setting up high-tech industries. They're doing it on finances and money from America, from Germany, and all these kinds of things, right? Anyway, we'll I could go on and on, but we'll continue with the clips here and see what Netanyahu says here.
For decades, that peace has proved elusive. Despite so many well-intentioned plans, one after the other, they failed. Why did they fail?
It's a
question.
They
failed because they did not strike the right balance between Israel's vital security and national interests and the Palestinians' aspirations for self-determination. Too many plans tried to pressure Israel to withdraw from vital territory like the Jordan Valley. But you, Mr. President,
you
recognize that Israel must have sovereignty in the Jordan Valley and in other strategic areas of Judea and Samaria. Rather than pay easy lip service to Israel's security and simply shut your eyes, hope for the best, you recognize that Israel must have sovereignty in places that enable Israel to defend itself by itself.
As one of the latest things, he repeats that over and over again about Israel stands on its own leg and we have to defend ourselves. Of course, again, this is a country that has nuclear weapons and they don't have to go and join a group where they sign
stolen
agreements. And
stolen nuclear weapons.
Exactly. No, that's true.
And this idea that the Jordan Valley, that's the area to the east of the West Bank, where you can see when they take that, they'll be surrounding the only Palestinian state, that, as they're calling it now. And I don't understand why this is so important to their security. It's Jordan to the east. I asked Shlomo, a guy who's been on my show before, why is the Jordan Valley important? Because, you know, they made the same argument for the Golan Heights, and it was like a high vantage point so that they can protect themselves from Syria. But I don't see why the Jordan Valley is important. My guess is more likely they just want to have full control over all of the borders of the exterior of this little Palestine area that they're going to maybe give them. And also there's probably a lot of good resources and farming area. There's definitely other reasons. I don't buy this. It's for our defense. Shlomo said it was because Palestine, it will be so narrow if we don't have that area too, so it needs to be extended out a little bit more.
Are you saying to give that to them, to push them over to the east?
No, they're not pushing. They're taking the east.
Right,
like,
right.
If you look at the new map and you'll be able to see it.
Right, okay. Let me
the
go
new
over there.
Map that they put out.
Mm-hmm.
There it is. So it's the area to the right in between Jordan and the green.
Mm-hmm. Wrong one. Let me go over here. Here we go.
Good news.
I wish I could see. Oh, I can actually zoom in a little bit in that. Okay, good.
Yeah, see the Jordan River right there to the right of Nablus?
Yep. Okay, interesting. I mean, but it's Lebensraum, obviously, right? I mean, that's what it is. It's room to live, to expand. I mean, we're talking about the Greater Israel Project that's tied into this from the what is the saying again? From the Euphrates to the sea, or
to the Nile? Yeah.
Yeah, to the
Nile. The
Euphrates to the Nile.
Right. I always get it mixed up. Tigris, Euphrates, Nile. Look at that real big on the right there. All Muslims who come in peace will be welcome to visit and pray at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. So that's almost like makes me think they're going to set up some kind of bomb or something at Al-Aqsa and then say, oh, well, I guess we have to take control of it and, you know, demolish it and rebuild the temple now because there was an attack.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I wouldn't put it past them. Anything is possible. All right, well, very interesting. Obviously, they expanded. They want expanded territory. They want more. And as you say, this is a nation that they want to grow. They want to set up industries. They've become a focal point in the new global kind of dynamic, really, that's arising between nations. They're going to be a pinnacle, a node point in world government. They're going to oversee technology, the internet security, weapons manufacturing, and stuff like that. So, I mean, they want to expand. That's what this is about, you know.
They want to be a superpower and lead the world, be a light unto the nations, and like Ben Gurion said, the Supreme Court of mankind and a shrine of the prophets, all there. They want to be. I'll show the verses. They want the law must come forth from Zion, and they want to be the capital, not just Jerusalem, not just the capital of Israel, but the capital of the whole world as a nation of priests.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, again, it was something I was going to mention. It just slipped out. But we'll return to it later. It's all tied in, both, of course, to the prophecy aspect of this, too. But also the, again, I think there's a geopolitical kind of advantage point of why they're pushing this now. But anyway, let's return to Netanyahu. Lots more to break down here. Oh, actually, I'm going to go forward a little bit here. Let me see. Let me pause that. Oh, there was one more thing I was thinking about. Not the main thing.
It's a nice
look.
Nice stop.
Oh, I was thinking about the... he said in the beginning, when we listened to this last clip here portion, he says, you know, peace have been attempted like over and over and over again. And somehow, for some reason, it's just kind of continued to fail. And it occurred to me, it's like, well, is that, you know, is that when you drop white phosphorus on the Palestinians? Or when, like, at what point is this great olive branch have been you know, reached out from the Israelis to the Palestinians, right?
At least he didn't just say it's the Palestinians' fault that they never took the deals. He kind of said it was, you know, both of us couldn't come to an agreement. When you see what Kushner's saying on CNN today, you'll be like, wow, he's totally just blaming the Palestinians, really insulting them.
Yeah. Regarding a pausing of a photo, did you ever see this one? I thought this one was kind of funny.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Anyway, let's return to. I still didn't go forward here. Hang
communist
on.
Merkel.
A communist
they want
Merkel.
To spread communism everywhere.
I'm not trying to say that she's Hitler or anything like that. I'm just. All right. Let me go forward here. 33:40. Was it 41? 33:14. Okay. Well, we're almost there. Okay. Let's play this clip.
For far too long. The very heart of the land of Israel, where our patriarchs prayed, our prophets preached, and our kings ruled, has been outrageously branded as illegally occupied territory. Well, today, Mr. President, you are puncturing this big lie.
Because he says so, I guess.
Yeah.
You are recognizing Israel's sovereignty over all the Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria, large and small alike.
Yeah, it means wherever there is a little bit of a Jewish community, that's going to be part of Israel now. It means if technically, if there's a Jewish community in Jordan, that's going to be Israel now.
And this was the plan all along. That's why they continued to build all these settlements despite international outcry and resolutions at the UN saying that they're illegal. They knew that if they can continue building them, they could eventually just annex them and say, well, they're there. We're not going to kick them out. So it's ours now.
Yeah.
These, as the distinguished pastors who are here know very well, these are places inscribed in the pages of the Bible. These are places carved into the bedrock of our common civilization. The sacred tomb in Hebron, where the fathers and mothers of the Jewish people are buried. Beth El, where Jacob dreamed of a ladder ascending to the heavens. Shiloh, where the Ark of the Covenant held the Ten Commandments for centuries.
Whoops.
That's what happened in Shiloh. Thanks to you, Mr. President, these areas and so many others that for millennia have been etched in the soul of the Jewish people and have fired the imaginations of millions of people around the world and across the world, these areas will now be recognized by the United States as a permanent part of the Jewish state.
Oh, yeah.
Can you pause that real quick?
Yeah.
So he's talking about Hebron. That's where the Cave of the Patriarch or Ibrahim Mosque is. I visited there in 2018 when I went to the Palestine and the West Bank. It's huge megalithic boulders where like Abraham and Sarah and some of his family are buried. And it was for the longest time, it was a mosque, but back, I can't remember what year, I think in the 90s.
Give me the area again, what in Hebron?
Hebron, yeah.
Hebron, okay, let me see.
Goldstein, the Kahani extreme Zionist Goldstein went in on Purim, their holiday where Esther had 70,000 Persians slaughtered. He went in and shot and massacred a bunch of Muslims that were praying there. And then afterwards, they split the mosque in two and made half of it a Jewish area. And also in Hebron, if you do Hebron Market, there, so it's a Muslim area. They built a settlement right on top of the middle of the city, and then on top of a market where the settlers who are just like, I mean, they're horrid the way that they behave towards the Palestinians there. They'll throw down piss and bleach and trash and boulders in the market. You can see the fence right there. Apartheid in Hebron. They have a fence above the market because the settlers were throwing so much stuff down on people. Apartheid in Hebron. Yeah, the fence up above. Right. So I walked right down that. It's one of the most ancient markets in the world.
Interesting. Yeah, there's some pretty interesting megaliths there to show those earlier. I've been very interested in this kind of stuff over the years. There's, of course, rumors of back in the day there were giants and they built all these things. There's these massive stones. There's one in famous, like the Trilithon is one of the biggest obelisks ever. I think it was never fully probably erected. It was essentially in a quarry. They were trying to dig it out, but it's so massive. I think this one is in Lebanon, if I remember that correctly. But there's a lot of these around, of course, in the ancient world kind of thing. But, yeah, these are ancient charged, places that obviously they want to kind of try to gain.
I took a video over, that photo right there. I stood right there and took a video of a guy that was like, humping against the wall basically and doing his prayers. And yeah. The huge stones there were incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they're massive. Something built these things. Okay. Very interesting. Well, let's proceed here. Excited about this long applause.
Mr. President, because of this historic recognition, and because I believe your peace plan strikes the right balance where other plans have failed, I've agreed to negotiate peace with the Palestinians on the basis of your peace plan.
My peace plan.
I was just going to say, I mean, it's like... This is obviously over, and again, it's over. He talked about all the people that are there, all the people that are surrounding Trump. Kushner, David Friedman, the ambassador. I mean, all these people that I mentioned. these are obviously they have a dog in this fight. They side by, I mean, this is a no-brainer to people, but it has to be reemphasized. They're siding
house.
With Israel every time. Yeah. You know,
he slept at Kushner's house. Kushner's dad got in trouble for campaign finance violations, donating to Netanyahu, and he just makes it seem like, oh, I will negotiate now because this is Trump's deal. You know, I have a clip in the montage for you where Vicky Ward says this is Netanyahu's peace plan.
Right, exactly. No, it is. That's obvious at this stage.
It's a great plan for Israel. It's a great plan for peace. Frankly,
not
Mr.
Palestine.
No. It's a great plan for peace. All you have to do, see. This is the thing. Why are you fighting? Just lay down your weapons and give up, and we'll have peace. It was like, well, you're trying to rape me and take over my house. It's like, well, yeah, but just give it. Don't you want peace? Yeah, I want peace. It's like, well, get off my property. No, lay down. Give up your weapons and roll over and do what we tell you to do. That's what it is. And it's this like, hello, can you do some kind of inner like soul searching and try to think what the other side wants? And I mean, again, while Palestine is sending bottle rockets of, you know, into some of the Israeli areas, they have the like massive weapons development, high tech shit. They have the Iron Dome. They have everything. They're given billions each year. I mean, they have everything. And it's like, oh, it's remarkable what this little nation has achieved. And it's like, well, what would it have done without America's help and all the foreign aid, all the money from Germany and stuff like that? They would hardly been anywhere near you know, much else what any other country in the region would have achieved, right?
Exactly.
All right. Anyway, a little bit more here from this, and then we'll get to your reel as well.
President, given all that you have already done for Israel, I'm not surprised. You have been the greatest friend that Israel has ever had in the White House.
MAGA.
At least you're honest about it, yeah. MAGA, make America great again.
Mm-hmm.
It's America first policy right here, folks.
Get a room.
Frankly, though we've had some great, outstanding friends in these halls.
At least they're honest about it. You know, it's like, you know, the Israeli lobby didn't do too poorly. Like, no matter if it was a Democrat or Republican, we, of course, have AIPAC on the backside. And if you happen to be a little bit more liberal, well, then we have J Street, and they're all working for the betterment of Israel and to the benefit of Israel. No matter who is in charge in the White House, they'll always have Israel's back. That's literally, like, what they openly talk about. There's no dissent when it comes to Israel in American politics.
It's not even close.
God, he gets so giddy.
Oh, he's
your historic decision.
You heard, and then when he started, he was choking up. What's the word? Saturday Night Live, he had a funny word for it. I don't know what it was. He's I can hardly breathe. I'm so excited about this. You know, this is like 1948 all over again.
To recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, to recognize Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights, to reaffirm Israel's legal claims in Judea and Samaria, to stand up to Iran, to pull out of that dangerous Iran deal, to confront is not the word, to eliminate Qasem Soleimani.
Yay, which they, of course, did on the basis of intelligence from Israel, by the way. It was obviously them who provided them. Here he is, just push the button.
And the United States in the military and strategic and intelligence fields, all this bear testament to the friendship and depth of your leadership and commitment to Israel. From our very first meeting here in the White House 3 years ago, you repeatedly made clear your commitment to help Israel achieve peace with the Palestinians and peace with the rest of the Arab world. Mr. President, I share that commitment, and I look forward to working with you to achieve a peace that will protect Israel.
I agree to the plan that I outlined. I'm right there with you.
Security, provide the Palestinians with dignity and their own national life,
right,
and improve Israel's relations with the Arab world. Your peace plan advances all these goals. First, it addresses the root cause of the conflict, by insisting that the Palestinians will finally have to recognize Israel as the Jewish state.
That's what it's about. And again, we have to reemphasize that for newcomers, for people who haven't been too accustomed to these kinds of topics and stuff, that, you know, Israel, they have an ethno-state. They have literally, like, DNA tests to become citizens, to marry. In fact, we covered it the other day. They had a renewal of this very fact, of this legal fact.
Upheld by the Supreme Court.
Upheld by the Israeli High Court, that DNA testing is a way to confirm Jewishness. Some people said Judaism, which of course is their religion. You can't find, you know, you can't do a DNA test and see if you have Judaism in you, but you can see if you have Jewish genetics, of course. But yeah, they upheld it. There was a little bit of a pushback. It was like, for people that already had confirmed their Jewishness, as it says here, it was considered to be discriminatory that the rabbinate kind of forced them to do it over again in certain instances. And that was like pushed back, and they say, no, we'll proceed as usual. Again, this is ethno-state stuff. This is, you know, confirming by genetics. Again, imagine any European country, and I'm not against that actually, but imagine any European country that says, you know what, we're going to post a law and we're going to say only those who have, I don't know, what, 60% of whatever country we're talking about DNA, they're considered to be citizens or something like that, right? That's what they have.
It's interesting in that headline, Lieberman is basically like a Russian agent. And so he doesn't want to have DNA tests. And just a couple weeks ago, the chief Sephardic rabbi says that all of these Soviets are coming here and that they're religion-hating Gentiles. So there's a little bit of a schism going on with like the religious Sephardic Jews and the Ashkenazis that are coming in from the Soviet Union, former Soviet Union.
No, I forget where it was I heard that, but I remember hearing about, there was a, yeah. I don't.
Like you can just look up Lieberman and Soviet, and it's like, I'm pretty sure there's headlines everywhere about
really?
It.
Really? Interesting. Okay. Yeah, because I remember hearing a little bit about that in terms of like, you know, testing and stuff. But at the same time, remember our common destiny, this conference that was had?
Mm-hmm.
Barbara Spector attended that. Apparently, there was a big portion of the Russian Jews or Soviet Jews that were trying to like unite them with the, well, both the Ashkenazi, you know, Jewish group, but even Sephardic and stuff like that. You're saying that's a little bit of a schism still between there, between them, their groups?
Well, the Ashkenazis in Israel Shahak's book, he says that the Ashkenazis are incredibly racist towards the non-Ashkenazis.
Yeah, I mean, they're the top, right? The highest ranked, if you will. I'm searching for Soviet and Lieberman, but maybe it's because I'm doing it on DuckDuckGo or something. Did you find any good headlines to show about
that? I see one,
that?
Soviet-born Putin ally becomes Israeli defense minister. And I just did a Google search, too. Not too much is coming up, but you know, he's definitely on the spectrum of being very close to Putin and pro-Russia.
Okay, interesting. And I remember that, too. The we might talk about that later if we have time. The European... the head of the European Jewish Congress, Cantor, he was the one who organized the World Holocaust Forum that was Monday, right? It was taking place Monday. They had world leaders had met a couple of days before. Prince Charles was there. Pence was there. All these, you know, powerful people were there, essentially. But there was a Polish video that was released where they criticized, Putin, that somehow he was behind that whole thing because it was Cantor, which is close with Putin, that had organized all that stuff. I'm not fully up to speed on some of the dynamics on the back end of there, what the schism might be, but you know,
it's probably for better for another video. But yeah, they're accusing Putin of rewriting Holocaust history with regards to Poland.
Exactly. Very, very interesting that little schism is starting to arise. We covered that actually in Weekend Warrior if people want to find out more about that. But we played two videos that was released by Polish officials about that, where they like kind of, they're blaming Putin that he's doing some kind of historical revisionism. But anyway, we're not going to get down into the weeds of that right now. I do want to finish off here just a little bit more from Netanyahu here before we move on to the next segment there, the clip you have.
Second, it stipulates that Israel will retain security control in the entire area west of the Jordan River, thereby giving Israel a permanent eastern border, a permanent eastern border to defend ourselves across our longest border. This is something we've longed to have. We now have such a recognized boundary. Third, your plan calls for Hamas to be disarmed and for Gaza to be demilitarized.
And that's it. Imagine being in that situation where you have to accept essentially laying down arms, right? Your only means to defense, no matter how limited they are, the very few, you know, bodies or whatever you want to call armies or, organizations that you have that are fighting back and push back in the region, they're saying effectively they have to dissolve, brand them a terrorist group or something, and we'll recognize you as a state. It's essentially making the Palestinian state completely toothless and clawless. There's nothing there. They can't defend themselves. And again, if then Israel would later on say, you know what, now when we've disarmed you, well, it's going to take the rest of your land, right? Let's assume that that's a scenario in the case. They would have zero ability to defend themselves or even do anything. And they're expecting Palestine to, after all these years, just roll over and like, yeah, this sounds like a good deal. Let's do that. They're totally not going to turn on us afterwards. We've laid down our weapons, right?
Yeah. In the chat, I see, give us your guns and we swear we'll be nice.
Yeah, exactly. And the same thing with the Second Amendment, actually, in the U.S. The very fact that these gun-grabbing maniacs are trying to take your guns is the very reason why you need them, right? And it's the same thing there for them. Like, if they're trying to disarm them, it's probably because they don't have your best interests at heart, you know? They want to do bad things.
Give up your weapons. You can trust us.
That's right. That's right. We come in peace. Give us your arms.
Fourth, it makes clear that the Palestinian refugee problem must be solved outside the state of Israel.
Now, that's very important. The Palestinian refugee problem must be solved outside of Israel. Do you know what that says to me is that when they declare whatever new territory that they take, they consider these Palestinian people to be refugees. Right? They're in our territory. They haven't the papers. Send them outside of Israel. Right? Send them somewhere else. I don't know. What do you think it
means? They want it to be a Jewish state. They pass the Jewish state law. They do the DNA test. That means they're not taking any Arabs in their land. They're just going to have to go elsewhere. Maybe they can find some nice hub areas in Sweden or something.
Yeah, no, exactly. Just export them to some European country. And you know that that's what they would do because they've done it in the past. They've done it not only with Eritrean migrants, many others as well. They directly... of course, have organizations like Israel Aid that it's actually literally on European soil, in this case Turkey, Lesbos, and some of these other islands, where they're standing around with big flags and, you know, they put bright orange life vests on sticks and stuff to the refugee boats. Here, come this way. It's not Israel. It's not in Israel on an Israeli island. Try to call in the boats. They're there to try to call them into European ports, right? And they're far, of course, from the only organizations. We have HIAS, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, all these groups, right? The many Jewish lobby groups, they're advocating for migration into Europe, but they don't advocate for migration into their own country. They, in fact, have an ethnostate with militarized walls surrounding them where they where you have to have a percentage of Jewish DNA to get into the country that way.
Fifth, it calls for our ancient capital, Jerusalem, to remain united under Israel's sovereignty. It, of course, ensures that religious sites remain accessible to all faiths, and it maintains the status quo on the Temple Mount. Sixth, your plan does not uproot anyone from their homes, Israelis and Palestinians alike.
Again, according to, today, then, or when exactly?
Yeah,
it's idiotic.
Instead, it proposes innovative solutions whereby Israelis will be connected to Israel and whereby Palestinians will also be connected to one another. That helps if you have these real estate people.
Listen to this.
They can come up with things normal human beings don't think about.
Normal human beings.
Normal human beings. Are these great ideas? An underground tunnel to connect Gaza and the West Bank? Wow.
But he also just called Trump an abnormal human being right there. Because it's like, you have that real estate. Listen to that.
That
again.
Ashkenazi IQ of Jared Kushner is the only one that could do it, I guess.
That's a normal human being, right? Or, I mean, they call everyone else cattle, essentially.
You have
right?
These real estate people, you know? They can come up with things normal human beings don't think about, and they have. Mr. President,
man, don't go off script.
That's
you're
off
horrible.
Script, yeah.
You're horrible off script, dude.
Don't is that, go off script.
Well, oh shit! I can't restart. Let me see where we were there. 40. Let me go back a little bit more here. I pressed the wrong button, folks. Sorry about that. Let's see where we were here. Let's see if we were.
Israel would be prepared to negotiate peace right away.
Let me back up a little
Your
bit
Your plan
more.
Does here. Not okay. uproot anyone from their homes.
Yeah, here
Palestinians,
we go.
Palestinians to have a better life.
There we go.
We want them to have a future of national dignity, prosperity, and hope. Your peace plan offers the Palestinians such a future. Your peace plan offers the Palestinians a pathway to a future state. I know that it may take them a very long time to reach the end of that path. It may even take them a very long time to get to the beginning of that path.
Oh, he's giving them a lot of credit here.
Yeah.
A lot of credit, right?
He sounds really optimistic that there's going to be a Palestinian
It's going to take a long time for them to even reach the beginning of it. Meanwhile, over here, we build space rockets and robots.
For years, he's been promising no Palestinian state. The headlines are in my montage.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Okay. Well, again, what kind of Palestinian? You can promise a lot of things, but at the end of the day, if that doesn't give you... you can say that it's going to give you sovereignty. You can say that it's going to give you prosperity. You can say that it's going to be all these great things. But ultimately, if you don't deliver that, it's just Orwellian in the true sense that it's just you promise all these things, but they're not going to deliver, and it's not going to be any good for them.
But if the Palestinians are genuinely prepared to take that path, if they're genuinely prepared to make peace with the Jewish state, and if they agree to abide by all the conditions you have put forward in your plan, Israel will be there. Israel will be prepared to negotiate peace right away.
Do everything we say and we'll negotiate peace with you.
Say that again, Adam.
Do everything that they want and then they'll negotiate peace.
That's right. That's right. Disarm.
And he knows they're not going to accept this.
No, and I think he says here, we're right at the end of this now, but... I believe he says here, too, that we're going to move ahead with this, essentially.
Regardless of the Palestinian decision, Israel will preserve the path of peace in the coming years.
Preserve the path of peace. Again, how more Orwellian can you get? Is that when you drop white phosphorus on them? Or what's, you know?
Peace means something different to them than it means to us.
Yeah, peace means you it's an enemy that's not fighting back against you anymore. That's what peace means, right? It's just, death. That's what peace means. It means there's no resistance from the opposite side, or opposition. They're gone. They're dead. They're defanged.
For at least 4 years, Israel will maintain the status quo in areas that your plan does not designate as being part of Israel in the future. At the same time, Israel will apply its laws to the Jordan Valley, to all the Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria, and to other areas that your plan designates as part of Israel, and which the United States has agreed to recognize as part of Israel.
See, that again, any territory, the Judea, the places that they have in Samaria, that's going to be Israeli territory, whatever the U.S. has recognized as territory to the Israelis, that's what it's going to become. That's what he's saying here. Incredible.
I like that.
I bet you do.
Yeah, of course he does.
This decision will protect Israel's security, ensure Israel's national interests, and leave open the possibility of a political settlement with the Palestinians in the coming years. Mr. President, I hope the Palestinians embrace your vision of peace. Embrace the plan that you and your team and us worked so hard to achieve.
And us. He couldn't even lie about that there. And us. All of us Jews who worked on this great plan. No Palestinians were part of developing the plan, but, you know, it's a great plan. Should accept the plan. What's wrong with the plan?
I hope that they seize the opportunity offered by your sweeping economic plan. I've read it. It takes enormous talent to reject $50 billion worth of investment.
Yeah.
I know what that does to an economy. I know what it will do to Palestinian lives. I know what it will do to the youth of the region.
It's a bribe. It's an economic bribe. And they're saying we
buy them off. Exactly.
They're buying them off. And they're saying, do all these things, scrap your military, stop supporting state terrorism, which, of course, they deem any kind of pushback or any, you know, any acceptance. Again, declaw them, take everything away from them, claim that they have sovereignty, bribe them with money. And again, this is not Israeli money. This is American money. It's Trump paying them off to please his Jewish banker masters, essentially. That's what I hear here.
And I just Googled a headline of Abbas said, we need the money, but won't be slaves to Trump peace team. That's what Abbas says.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I hope that the Palestinians embrace this and build with Israel a future of prosperity and peace.
Mm-hmm.
I also hope that our other Arab neighbors embrace your vision and forge a path of reconciliation with Israel that can create for all of us a brilliant future. Mr. President, I want to congratulate your fantastic team. There's no other word. Your fantastic peace team for all their work. Jason Greenblatt.
This is the lineup.
He'll list them all again.
Yeah, did he go through all of them before? Let me see if he listed.
Yeah, he did.
Thank you, Jason, for the terrific job.
Do you know if Jason Greenblatt is relative to the ADL, Jonathan Greenblatt? I think it's the brother. I think it's the brother. I could be wrong. Let me just see here.
There's a lot of Greenblatts.
Yeah.
And I'm not one of them, if anybody's trying to troll in the chat.
Yeah. Well, your name doesn't end with Blatt.
No, never did.
Jason Greenblatt, Joseph. I don't think it is. Yeah, but whatever. They represent the same agenda at the end of it. All right, we don't have to listen to the rest, but it's unbelievable that this has been outlined as some kind of great olive branch extended to the Palestinians. And that they have to accept this. We've now broken it down. We see that it's about the economy. I think that this has to do, if they could get their way, they would probably subjugate Palestinians into some kind of, they're already, of course, second class citizens, even citizens at all, but under kind of just some industrial umbrella, essentially.
They're definitely not citizens. They've got different license plates, different IDs. They're not allowed to travel on the same roads.
That's right.
Go through checkpoints. They're blocked and stuff.
Yeah. So we'll see where this goes. But that's really that. Any other comments about this unfurling?
Well, I just sent you a link through the message area. It's a Chabad article about when it's permissible for them to lie. And one of the reasons is if it's promoting peace, they're allowed to lie. So all of these lies we've been hearing going along with all of this.
Do you have your Twitter up, Adam?
Yeah, you want me to share it?
Yeah, can you send it through there on the DM? Actually, it's easier than bringing up the message.
I got you.
Perfect, thank you. I'll pull that up right here. Let me just double check which account. Let me see here. Okay, let's do that one. There we go. All right, let me pull that up here. Yeah, you said that. Was this a comment from Chabad, you said, on this specific thing?
It's a Chabad article about when it's permissible for them to lie. And if it's to promote what they call peace, they're allowed to lie about it, apparently.
Here it is. Let me see. Let me pull this up here. Here we go. Telling the truth and when it's permissible to be less than honest. Interesting. In the book of Genesis, we read how... Go away.
Well, just do a Control F and then do peace. And you'll skip to the paragraph. There it is. A lie told to promote peace is not included at all in the prohibition of telling lies.
And we're told that a lie told to promote peace and shall be explained is not included. Yeah, and that's interesting. It shall be explained is not included at all in the prohibition of telling lies. It seems that since the ultimate goal of this lie is a positive one, it is not prohibited. Again, positive for whom, right? Isn't that what it's all about? Like, what are you talking about? Like, if it's, you know, to the detriment of someone else, but to the benefit of you, then of course you will list it as a positive one, but it will be a negative one for the partner that you're trying to ultimately fool. And again, to promote peace for whom, right? Peace for you might mean war for someone else, right? Yeah, there's all these weird things in like scripture and Talmud and things that they like analyze and go through and like what can we do
here?
They're
the kings of loopholes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's true. I could say a lot of things there, but I'll be silent. Shall we dive into your reel, Adam? I haven't seen it yet, so I'm excited about watching this here with you. Let me know when you want me to pause and stuff too, by the way.
Okay.
Otherwise, I'll just start playing it, and we'll head into this, guys. Let me confirm that we have the audio up on this, too.
Before we start, Netanyahu ended it with saying something about peace and security or peace and safety. So that leads into the first verse I'm going to show.
Okay, beautiful. There we go.
Ezekiel 13:10.
Do you want me to pause this, or have you included this?
Yeah, it's like 5 seconds for the screenshot.
Okay.
So you can, yeah. Because they have seduced my people, saying peace, and there was no peace, and one built up a wall, and lo, others daubed it with untempered mortar. So they're calling it peace, but there's no peace. So that could be the peace deal that we're seeing right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one.
Interesting. Yeah.
Thessalonians 5:1-3, for when they shall say peace and safety, then suddenly sudden destruction cometh upon them as travail upon a woman with a child, and they shall not escape.
Yeah. Peace and safety, and then sudden destruction cometh upon them as travail. Yeah. It's this, what is this? This Bible, right? Thessalonians?
Yeah.
It's just the Bible. Is that Old Testament or New?
I think Thessalonians is New Testament.
Is that new?
People
okay.
are going to rail me over the coal. So I did a video on this. It's the Chabad peace plan scam.
Mm-hmm.
They pretend like they're trying to make peace. You can let that run. But really, okay. it's not. They don't.
And
their law. Here we go. Play this.
You want to play this? Okay.
Hopeful
this is today.
That the Palestinians,
today.
For once, will do something rational, come to the table and negotiate. And so what we've done is we've created an opportunity for their leadership to either seize or not. If they screw up this opportunity, which, again, they have a perfect track record of missing opportunities, if they screw this up, I think that they will have a very hard time looking the international community in the face, saying they're victims, saying they have rights. This is a great deal for them. If they come to the table and negotiate, I think they can get something excellent.
So, Jared.
And you're going to see more and more pressure put on Palestinian leadership to do it. What we've done, look, right now, what's Palestinian leadership? You're talking about them like they're great diplomats. What are they calling for? They're calling for a day of rage. Who do you know that runs a state that when they don't get what they want, they call for a day of rage? That's not
yeah.
how people who are.
Who do you know that has been doing those kinds of things? Gee, I wonder who that could be. Just, again, dropping white phosphorus.
They would never, bombing. If they were in the Palestinian shoes, they would never take this
No,
deal. Nobody would.
No, of course not. This is how Orwellian it is. And again, it's very apt that you're showing like a CNN clip here, right? Because like for America, it's just like far left, anti-American, pro-globalist policies that they're shoving down the Americans' throats that are watching CNN all day. Here you get essentially a right-wing hardline position where they're allowing Israel and Israel's interest to be completely ethnocentric, and they would never have allowed this for America or any other European country for that matter too. CNN is taking railing on Hungary because they want to preserve their heritage and their culture. I don't know if you've seen some of those clips. It's amazing. These reporters from CNN is like lambasting them. How many refugees have you taken in? Oh my God, I can't believe it. It's like they've never pushed Israel up against that same wall. Never. All right. Should I keep playing that?
Yeah, okay. I think there's a little bit more. Yeah.
Capable of running a state work. So again, the Palestinian leadership have to ask themselves a question. Do they want to have a state? Do they want to have a better life? If they do, we have created a framework for them to have it, and we're going to treat them mm-hmm. in a very respectful manner. If they don't, then they're going to screw up another opportunity like they've screwed up every other opportunity that they've ever had in their existence.
It's like talking to them like a dog or something, like, you know, We know what's best for them. You better accept this.
Or else, don't try to play the victim or say that this is a bad deal. And then now here's the Rebbe. So Kushner's Chabad Lubavitch Rebbe talking to the Temple Institute guy, the guy that wants to rebuild the temple, saying, yes, make no deal with them. Just pretend like we're making a deal, basically.
Interesting. For the podcast audience, I want to ask you, Rabbi Hassi, I'm about to have talks with the Arab guy. It's important that the Rebbe tell the government and all the Jews that it's forbidden to talk to the Arabs. Oh, shit, that's moving very fast right
now. It is forbidden to talk to the Arabs about Israel and to give territories of Eretz Israel to the enemy.
Interesting. They promised me, and they will surely keep their promises, that of all the talks, there will be not be any concessions of territories. The talks are only so the public shouldn't say that you're at Israel, like Israel, right? The country is not interested in peace. Now remind us again, what Rebbe was this? The highest.
This
one
was
they
the
had?
Highest rabbi in Chabad Lubavitch. He died like 30 years ago, but Kushner went and met him when he was young, and he visited his grave on the eve of the 2016 election.
Interesting. And I'm translating for the podcast audience. Also tune into the radio version of the show here too. He goes on to say, the Rebbe here, he doesn't mean they're right, but this is a criticism that is hard to counter, especially among Jews. One last thing, Rebbe. All the Jews are waiting.
You can skip this. This part's irrelevant. I should cut that out.
Oh, no worries. Okay, let me skip forward a little bit.
Oh, you can't skip, though. Okay, here we go.
No, I can't.
It's just basically the Rebbe forever has been saying, no, give no land, make no covenant with them. But then now we have Kushner saying, oh, it's the Palestinians screwing up, not accepting these screw jobs, blaming them. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, we've been over it, but it's important for people to understand it, that, like, the situation that the Palestinians would have been in would never have been accepted by Jews, by Israel, by the Israelis. And they're trying to see, again, what you won't hear in the media, maybe a couple of small little voices of criticism, but it won't go all the way. It won't be as critical as it can be of Israel. The majority, of course, of the mainstream will just go, like, you know, on Israel's side. This is a great opportunity for them, and oh my God, why aren't they taking this and stuff? That's all you're going to hear. You're not going to hear any valid criticism of this deal. I doubt it. We'll see how they react to it. But anyway, should we play the next one here?
I think this is English, so you won't have to.
Got it.
Never mind.
It's okay.
The Rebbe reiterated something that we discussed at our meeting a year and a half ago. This is Ariel Sharon. And we discussed a number of times since. He wrote about it a number of times. The matter of Israel's borders. The Rebbe maintains that we must stop being apologetic when it comes to Israel's borders and stop trying to justify our stance. We must look at our present borders as the legitimate borders of Israel. He said the only determining factor here is the security of Jews in Israel. That's all that matters.
Yeah, that's right.
That is the sole factor. And if the security of Jews in Israel demands that these be the borders, then these borders must be held. And it isn't sufficient to merely hold the borders. The areas must be settled. So this is why all the settlements happened. There's no reason to apologize. The territories are ours. We must settle them.
Yeah, that's amazing, huh? Absolutely amazing. Yeah. Yep. Ah, wow. Okay, let's see if this is an issue. Okay, I can read this. The Rebbe Bless Me is another clip. I guess this looks like it's later. The other one was probably from like 70s or something, maybe. I don't know when they're from. But
we got the point. If you want to scroll through to the next clip,
sure,
we can skip this one.
Yeah, no, it's good. But
it's a guy showing him the settlements, and he's saying, yes, build more settlements, you know, be unapologetic. This is our holy land. Don't give them any territories. It will be peaceful and pleasant.
Yeah, of course it will be peaceful because it will be all Jews in these areas. There won't be any Palestinians. They've ethnically cleansed them from the area, and that's peace, right? That's why when we show the previous scripture that you mentioned as well, it's like, well, you can lie if the ultimate goal is peace. And peace, of course, is when there's just Jews in these areas and there's no Palestinians to fight with, right? Why is there another kind of like a religious reason? What, is it just that the scriptures demand, like, this is ours and God demands us to populate
the
them?
The scriptures are next. I'll show you the highlights of the scriptures, the commandments that they follow.
Okay, they talk about a United States a little
Moshiach bit. Moshiach will be here soon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Intifada. Do you want me to go through this or too? Go past it?
There's no need for negotiations is what it said there.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so there's Trump in 2011.
Sorry,
this is the guy
here.
That's making the peace deal.
Let me play this here. Sorry, it's a little skippy, okay. The yeah, player yeah. There. There we go. Okay.
So Trump's tweet from 2011, we must stand firm against the UN's ploy to sabotage Israel. If the UN grants the Palestinian statehood, then we must immediately defund it.
Interesting.
And now this is the same Trump that wants the Palestinians to make a deal with them.
Yeah, exactly.
CBN News, Israeli and evangelical leaders to Trump, do not give up Jewish land for peace with Palestinians. So for religious reasons.
Yeah, yeah, right. In other words, it would then logically make sense that this deal would still not counter some of these previous statements. It would just be that, yeah, we've found a loophole, as you said, to basically ensure this peace and security while at the same time it sounds good, right? It sounds good mm-hmm. that this is for the betterment of the Palestinians. But in reality, it won't be a true nationhood for them. There will be in a limited state, right? I'll continue playing here.
They shall not dwell in the land. Exodus 23:33. So yeah. Ethno-state based.
Yep.
You can let this stream.
Okay.
I'll tell you to pause if I have to. The people shall dwell alone and shall not be reckoned among the nations. And then pause that one. Hasidic University. No allowing idol worshippers to settle in the land of Israel. Jews refuse to sell land in Israel to idolatrous Gentiles at all times. That includes Christians. And to block idolaters from visiting even temporarily once Jews gain full control of the land of Israel.
Jeez.
So, very virulent ethnocentrism.
Jeez.
Yep. Chief Rabbi, non-Jews shouldn't be allowed to live in Israel unless they follow the Noahide laws, which worships them as God's chosen people and serves them.
Mm.
God giveth thee land as an inheritance to possess it, and thus blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. So,
what was that? Who was Amalek again? Is it
any enemy that they want to destroy
okay.
to rise and kill first? Any possible threat or opposition?
Wasn't there like an actual tribe essentially that had the name Amalek at that time or something? But they're using that as a
Yeah,
a
the
proxy.
Germans were Amalek, the Iranians, the Palestinians, anybody, me, I've been called Amalek by people on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all religious still.
Yeah. Gaza campaign is war against Amalek, says Chief Rabbi.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Deuteronomy shall smite them, utterly destroy them, make no covenant with them, show no mercy unto them. So, this is their commandment that they follow. Do not make a covenant with them.
Right.
A deal with. So Kushner's pretending like he wants to make a deal, but this is the commandment that he's essentially following in truth.
Now, what people need to understand as well is they need to get politics out of it a little bit, right? Because ultimately they have, as the highest advisors, they have rabbis that are studying scripture. They're they cross-reference or what happened here, what did this historical character do, what are we allowed to do, what should we do according to the scriptures, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff.
The Rebbe met with all the political leaders with Netanyahu. He helped Netanyahu get into power, essentially.
All right,
So
they're filtering all of this through. It's not politics first. It's religion first. And
religion is upstream from politics. Your beliefs of religion have a huge effect on your actions in politics.
Yeah, so when people turn on CNN and look at this, like, oh, how great, it's a peace deal. Then you have to understand, like, no, they're seeking to get something that benefits them from a religious perspective out of this. That's why they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here's the next one.
Lord God delivered the land into thine hands, but the women and the little ones and the cattle and all that is in the city, even all the spoil thereof, thou shalt take unto thyself. Eat the spoil of thine enemies, which the Lord thy God hath given thee. So that's what they follow when they take the Palestinian land, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Play there. Utterly destroy them, all the people that were in the land of Canaan, which is modern day Israel. Let it play through. I'm not going to read all of it.
No, I got you there. It's Hittites. It's interesting. But thou shall utterly destroy them, namely the Hittites. I was looking at some really interesting, the documentaries on YouTube. I suggest people look into it. The collapse of the Bronze Age, the different civilizations they used to reign from Assyria mm-hmm. to Mesopotamia to the Hittites to Mycenae or the Greeks, Minoans and stuff like that. You know, there was these different peoples that moved in. Of course, you have the Sea Peoples as one of the biggest elements. Egypt, of course, I forgot to mention among those too. But you had essentially a massive collapse at some point, too. And it's speculated that a new tribe came in and they utterly destroyed some of these great ancient civilizations. I'm mentioning mm-hmm. it because it's like there's historical precedent to kind of what's happening right now.
It's
right,
still with the mindset and the commandment that they follow in modern day, that God gave them this, and these are the verses that they use as support
yeah.
for that.
Yeah, that's right. All right, continue playing here.
And it says, "Then ye shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land from before you, and destroy all their pictures, and destroy all their molten images, and quite pluck down all their high places. And ye shall dispossess the inhabitants of the land, and dwell therein, for I have given you the land to possess it."
Mm-hmm. And again, this is true for what's happening now when it comes to like the cultural destruction, heritage destruction. In the West and other, again, look at even what ISIS managed to do in some of the territories that they control, right? They blew up these statues, they knocked them over, they were in, remember when America invaded Iraq 2003? These museums that were looted, that were destroyed and stuff, all of this is tied together. It's not an accident that some of these radical Muslim groups that are funded by Israel ultimately, or true, doing their bidding anyway, are doing some of these things that's described in scripture.
Yeah, they criticize ISIS like, oh, look, they're knocking down these Buddhist statues or the Christian churches. Well, look, their religion does the same thing.
Yeah, yep, sure does.
Chabad rabbi, destroy their holy sites, kill men, women, children, and cattle. Very loving and tolerant.
To blame the Jewish communities of Judea and Samaria for the lack of peace between Israelis and Palestinians would be a deliberate oversight of history at best. The Arabs rejected opportunities for peace time and again.
Same thing.
The 1937 Peel Commission report, the Arabs rejected it. The 1947 UN partition plan, rejected. The 1948 Israeli offer for truth, rejected. The 2000...
It's like you come to someone, you want to buy something from them. And you make these shitty offers all the time. You know, it's like, yeah, whatever, you're going to buy something. It's valued around $1,000. And they show up and like, here's $20.
Like, let me get read out of just here. One here's, quick paragraph here's $100 from Christopher John Bjerknes's Putin's Reign of Terror. It's Ben-Gurion, the first prime minister of Israel, says, "Why should the Arabs make peace? If I was an Arab leader, I would never make terms with Israel. This is natural. We have taken their country. Sure, God promised it to us, but what does that matter to them? Our God is not theirs. We come from Israel, it's true, but 2,000 years ago, and what is it to them? There has been anti-Semitism, the Nazis, Hitler, Auschwitz, but was that their fault? They only see one thing. We have come here and stolen their country. Why should they accept that? They may perhaps forget one or two generations' time, but for the moment, there is no chance. So it's simple. We have to stay strong and maintain a powerful army. Our whole policy is there. Otherwise, the Arabs will wipe us out."
So he's recognizing what they've done and that he's wrong, but his only position is, but we'll remain firm and we'll do what we have to do.
We're stronger. We have America and Britain supporting us, basically,
The
Soviet Union.
This was Ben-Gurion who said that?
Yeah, Ben-Gurion, yeah, the proud Bolshevik first prime minister of Israel.
Prime minister. How long did he go for, like into the 50s or something? Or when did he
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
Okay, yeah, I'm just curious when that might have been. But anyway, we'll continue playing here.
Camp David summit rejected. The 2001 Taba Summit, rejected. The 2007 Annapolis Conference, rejected. The 2008 offer of Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, we are still waiting for an answer on that. The 2014 Secretary of State Kerry's Peace Initiative.
These are all awful deals.
Well, exactly. That's what I said. This is like doing a sham offer on something, but you can come to the table and you can claim, see, we've offered them all these things, and it's their fault It's them who's refusing peace or whatever. This is like, well, break down what it was that you offered and how we would dispossess the people that you're trying to steal the land from, and then we'll see if it was reasonable or not to reject it.
And there was one leader of Israel, Yitzhak Rabin, who was assassinated by his own people because he was going to do a peace deal, and they didn't want
there
that to
go.
Happen because no covenant can be made with the Arabs.
Yeah, that's right. I remember Gilad talked about him a lot, and some of the other, even Israel Shamir, but they've spoken. I get what seems to be in kind of admiration of that prime minister, that like he was kind of decent for being a Zionist, I guess. But all right.
Hamas. And today, in the upcoming U.S. peace plan, the Palestinians say it is dead on arrival. Ask me to explain how Israel implements international law, specifically with regard to the Jewish communities of Judea and Samaria. Today, I will provide the answers. But before we discuss international law, we must understand the context and facts. Today, I will present to you the four pillars that prove the case for Jewish ownership of the land of Israel. The first pillar is the Bible. The Jewish people's rightful ownership of Eretz Israel, the land of Israel, is well documented throughout the Old Testament and beyond.
But like someone just wrote that. I mean, I know that there might be Christians or whatever, and they believe in this, and but ultimately it was written by human hands. I mean, that's just a fact. They claim it's divinely inspired or whatever, but don't you see that as all text, there would be a geopolitical incentive of why you would want to write something and make it, you know, manifested of sorts in scripture. And now they're going to that, using that as the excuse for why the land belongs to them.
The whole world doesn't believe in their religion, so they shouldn't be able to use it as justification to steal land.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let us discuss our first pillar of proof, the Bible. The Jewish people's right to the land of Israel is mentioned over a dozen times in the Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible, which includes the Torah, the Old Testament, the prophets, and the writings.
It's like so.
In the book of Genesis, the very first book of the Old Testament, God says to Abraham, and I will read that in Hebrew.
Put on the cap.
Oh, geez, really? What do you know what that's about? Why do they have to do that?
I guess they have to wear it when they read.
It's a little OCD, is that?
Rituals.
Rituals.
And I will establish my covenant between me and you and your descendants after you throughout their generations for an everlasting covenant. And I will give to you and to your descendants after you all the land of Canaan for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God.
It's also interesting, the definitions and like, okay, what is the land of Canaan? Like what territory is that? They have like, you know, they're sitting with maps and looking and old scriptures and like, what were we actually promised? How much real estate can we take here? You know, so it's like, I don't know.
Well, I think the next clip, the guy says it.
Oh, okay. All right.
Between the two rivers.
This is the deed to our land.
Case closed.
Case closed. Well, let's just say it. It's like, here it is, right here. It says in this thing that it's ours, so fuck you. It's like, well,
God
well
is
played.
A real
well played,
agent.
Sir. I'll walk away.
This guy wants anti-Semitism to be illegal, too, at the UN. He's the ambassador to the UN for Israel.
Right
says
now?
He wants consequences and punishment for anti-Semitism.
This isn't recent, is it? This clip?
This is within the last few years, yeah.
Oh, okay, wow. All right, so it was longer. While ago.
Book of Genesis to the Jewish exodus from Egypt to receiving the Torah on Mount Sinai and to the realization of God's covenant in the Holy Land of Israel, the Bible paints a consistent picture. The entire history of our people and our connection to Eretz Israel begins right here.
Oh, they can take it off there again. That's good, huh? All right, you want to continue? Play the next one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Get the fuck out of here! This is my land, you
This is not your land, it belongs to these families!
Land, you son of a bitch! I'm gonna kill you and the Palestinians!
Wait, is this Louis Theroux?
doing
yeah,
this.
Yeah, it's a West Bank settler, yeah.
Right, he's a Canadian, I believe, right? He did a documentary called Ultra Zionists. Is that from this one?
Yep.
Very interesting. I don't know if you included it, but he did, he detailed stuff when he's going to some of these areas and, like, the Gentiles can, like, help out. The Christians can help out to, like, pluck grapes and stuff like that for the Israeli wineries, but they're, like, not allowed to enter into the actual where they, like, actually, what's the term in English? Like, you squeeze the, you push the wine or, squish the grapes, essentially, because
there's a headline
unclean.
About that. It's not racist. The Gentiles can't touch the food, and it's not racist. It's just Jewish law.
Yeah, so exactly. It's just law.
Well, I guess that means that Jewish law is racist
you're just
supremacist.
You're just dirty, and you can't go into certain areas here, but it's fine. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's a good documentary. It shows some of this insanity.
You son of a shit. Hand for this. This is my land.
Yeah. Now, again, for the podcast audience, forgive me, I forgot to mention that they're showing footage from a West Bank settler here. These are some of the...
This is my land.
Yeah,
God gave it to me.
Words that get thrown at them here.
Give it to me. Fuck you. Call everyone you want.
Nazi. Never heard that one before.
No, that's kind of new, actually. That's interesting, yeah. Never heard them use that.
This is my land. God gave it to me, and fuck you.
There's no one.
All right.
Chosen people.
Well, very, very, very succinct and flawless logic.
Wants peace more than me, but peace will be achieved by strength, not by carving out our tiny country and handing it over to our enemies.
You're not carving out your own country. You're withdrawing from occupied territories, which everyone in the world, including Israel's own Supreme Court, regards as occupied territory. That's the problem. You can't carve out stuff that's not your own.
Mahdi, I guess what you need to do is go back and change the Bible. You need to change the narrative of the Bible because it's all there.
Is Israel a theocracy?
All Muslims, Christians,
is Israel now a theocracy?
And Jews.
Is it a religious state?
I assume...
Why are you quoting the Bible to me? I'm quoting the Supreme
Christians,
Court
Muslims,
of
and
your
Jews.
Country. Hold on, the Supreme Court of your
let
country.
Let me finish.
Let me just put the quote of the Supreme Court to you, and then you respond.
You're finding...
The Judea and Samaria areas are held by the State of Israel in belligerent occupation. That is the view of the Supreme Court of your country. Are you saying the Bible trumps your Supreme Court? Is Israel now a theocracy?
Let me finish.
Yes.
Billions of Muslims and Christians believe in the Bible. I assume, including yourself, I don't know. If you want to say that our land does not belong to us, I suggest you go change the Bible first, come back, and then show me a new Bible that says that the land of Israel doesn't belong to Jews.
Okay. Now, that's a very important and interesting note and point that he's making there, because essentially he's recognizing that, well, we wrote it, and now we have it here as a source. And the do you see what I'm saying?
Isn't that convenient what their ancestors wrote were that they were the ones chosen by God? What are the odds?
What
of
are
that?
The odds? Yeah, there's never been any people anywhere who think that they weren't like more special. It isn't in that sense. I mean, sure, there's some that don't have the application of that like these guys do. But my point is, every tribe, if you go back in the record, we're like, we're the best. Obviously, we're going to win and stuff. But now they've bred ethnocentrism essentially out of every other tribe. Well, specifically among Europeans, obviously, white people are like the bottom of the scale there now in terms of have any kind of consciousness when it comes to their ethnicity and group and whatever. But the point is, I could write a document today or a bunch of us, and we decide this is a religion now. It's like Scientology or something, whatever. You literally come together, you write the shit, and then you like see, then you use that as a reference source for why you should have X, Y, Z in the future. But he's also admitting almost to in a sense that, well, you go ahead and write a Bible there, or change that, and then show me that. You know what I mean? It's this the tie, which I've always found interesting since like the dawn of like Hammurabi, right? These laws in Babylonia and shit like that. That it's like, as long as it's written, it makes it magical, right? It's not that you just say so. It's the fact that it was written. It was written 1,000 years ago, 500 years ago, even 300 years ago. Makes it magical. It makes it something special. And as long as you adhere to the written word, you're fine. You don't have to have a moral conscience because it's been written. It's very bizarre. It's a totally different mentality. It's foreign to us, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, there's people that dispute that they're even the actual same Hebrews from the Bible too.
Right,
you know?
The Caesareans, so all the absolutely.
So sure. I know, Henrik, we're 2 hours in. There's probably another 25 minutes of this. I don't know
20,
if you want to wrap it up, or
it's up to you. Do you want to take a little short break, or do you want to wrap up here? That's up to you, really.
I could keep going. I don't need a break. Just
okay.
I didn't know if, you know, if longer videos don't get.
So this is very interesting. Let's do the rest, and then we'll wrap up. I appreciate you taking the time into doing the compilation here for us. So we'll proceed. I'll be a little bit less long-winded too. All right, here we go.
So now, if it's very convenient for you to sort of shove that away, that's fine.
I'm not
now,
shoving anyway. You've
regarding
made your
the
religious
Supreme
education
Court,
point.
You're right.
Yeah.
Okay, and this one says, shall make no covenant with them nor their gods. They shall not dwell in the land, for if they serve their gods, it will surely be a snare unto thee. And just let that one play through.
Okay,
watch it all.
Here's a map.
There's
that
the land going down. And then, look, they just took the Jordan Valley there on the right, and then there's the settlements creeping in by design so that there'll never be a state. And there's also a verse where it says, oh, the last one, it said, by little and little they will take the land.
Yeah,
which
tippy-toe tactic. You take a little bit here, a little bit there, and then there's a settlement. And no, that's not illegal now. And again, you do two steps forward, one step back. You take this much, right, and then you give up 50%. And then it's like, well, we've given you back. What are you complaining about? It's like you've still stolen like half of what you took initially. But yeah, I mean, these are archipelagos. This looks like some island belt in the Baltic or something. I mean, you have to have a boat or like an airplane or something, a teleport machine to do this, pull this off. Here's a new map, of course, that we showed. But yeah, good that you're showing that again, of course.
All those little settlements. Netanyahu, no Palestinian state on my watch. So pretending, he's just pretending today that there will be a deal.
Yeah.
You let it play.
Yep.
Another one, no, a Palestinian state won't be created. And that was just April 2019. Israel is a nation state of the Jewish people and them alone. Netanyahu reported to say legal system based on the Talmud. In Joel, it says,
I'll pause here.
Yeah, the Lord shall roar out of Zion, utter his voice, heavens and the earth shall shake, and so shall ye know that I am the Lord your God, dwelling in Zion, my holy mountain. Then shall Jerusalem be holy, and there shall no strangers pass through her any more.
Interesting.
So,
and again, of course, this is significant because they're interpreting everything through a religious lens and perspective, so that means eventually, if they follow the scripture, that means there won't be any people who are non-Jewish that will have access to Zion, the holy mountain, Jerusalem, right?
While they push multiculturalism and open borders everywhere else. I mean,
how do
they think they can get away with this double standard?
Yeah. Or maybe there's some other, there's always these weird interpretations. Well, strangers mean that you've converted them to, or like they have been decapacitated in some way, or they, you know what I mean? There's some caveat always to these definitions and what it actually means.
They're not Noahides or Shabbos goys that do stuff for us on this Sabbath.
Exactly.
Out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord of Jerusalem. So that's why Zion has to be the capital.
Yeah.
They believe. I just have a one second.
Okay.
Benefits of the multitude of nationalities.
For the podcast audience, this is the Rebbe speaking here again. He's dead now. But
the melting pot of the multitude of nationalities in New York, to see the contrast of, you know, one rule for them, another rule for the Goyim.
Yep, that's right.
But the title of the melting pot.
For many nations. Yeah, all these nationalities live in good peace. Oh, that's sure that works out, huh? And in harmony, and every one of them should strengthen all the nationalities around them. Especially in the matters of charity. Amen.
I hope that in the near future, the
melting pot will be so active that it will not be necessary to underline every time that they are Negro.
What does it mean by that?
They are white.
Oh, there's no distinction between them. In other words, that they interbreed with each other. That's what he's saying.
Clergy plan. Rothschild and Warburg funded.
Yeah. So New York is, it's a beautiful, wonderful melting pot. We remain ethnically homogenous and pure in Israel, right?
And now all the black people are beating them up in the streets of New York.
Right, right. It's true. It's definitely coming back on them.
All of them were created in the same God and created for the same purpose, which is to worship them, basically.
Right.
I said before, I'm not so happy about the landing. They say the Brooklyn on one side and Manhattan on the second side. And then there are all the people in the Hispanic.
With everybody mixed together.
It's a
real melting pot. And certainly it must be melting pot for all good things. With no differences.
Oh, wow.
While Israel has DNA testing upheld by the Supreme Court.
Yep, like we just saw.
The third temple. We will do animal sacrifices again, and God will give us the whole of Israel, all the way up to the Euphrates River and down to the Nile River. We'll have the greater Israel that we've always dreamed of, and we won't have to believe in Jesus to get it. That's what you guys are. Maybe you'll be alive. Hopefully you'll be alive to see it. But that's the truth.
Baby. There
you
go.
You know where that's, what was that from?
That was just a YouTube channel, a Christian going to like a Jewish event.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right, let's play the next
Pete
one.
Netanyahu is like the grand chess master. He may as well really have been our Secretary of State these last 2 years. Because Jared's peace plan is essentially Bibi's peace plan. And it involves everyone else sort of doing things and everyone else paying for it, except Israel. I think you can't underestimate the influence of Bibi here.
You know, I've heard people say that the majority of the Jewish people don't support the policy of the Israeli government when it comes to Palestine. And God.
Here's Normal Finkenstein being interviewed, by the way, for the podcast audience.
Holocaust History. It's a good book.
Yeah. Gaza and the West Bank. And how could that be? And can you speak to that? Like, I know the Likud party is like the extremist party, a right-wing party in Israel. What would you say the percentage of support they actually have in the population inside of Israel and out?
Well, we should be clear that, number one, Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister of the state of Israel, he's been the head of state now for about a decade, and he's gone through many elections.
Five terms.
Even though he's surrounded.
How many? Five terms?
Longest serving prime minister in Israeli history.
Interesting.
Like a dictator.
Yep.
By one scandal after another, none of these scandals have actually made a big dent in his popularity. And the reason for that, I think, is pretty straightforward. It's pretty uncontroversial, at any rate, in my opinion. That is to say, Benjamin Netanyahu is an obnoxious, racist, Jewish supremacist. And all of those descriptives, obnoxious, racist, Jewish supremacist, he's wholly representative of the Israeli population. And the reason they keep re-electing him, despite the scandals, which are always said to be imminently going to bring him down, despite the scandals that never bring him down, it's because when they look at Benjamin Netanyahu, most of the Israeli population, they see themselves. And they vote for him because in his mental outlook, I wouldn't really call it values, because I don't think people like Mr. Netanyahu have any values per se. But in terms of mental outlook, contempt for Arabs, contempt for Muslims, actually, with all due respect to you, Mr. Dorr, and all your listeners, unless they're Jewish, he has contempt for all of you. He's a Jewish supremacist, but he also happens to be in a separate category, a racist. And now, even though I don't like to use that terminology because it's too simple and too sloganeering, it happens to be, I think, in this particular circumstance, it's illuminating. Why?
Yeah, and also I want to point out in connection to that, you know, those talking points you hear, the Jimmy Dore shows that this was from, is like, it's a small alternative, like podcast kind of thing, right? I mean, it's sure fairly big on, I guess, in one way, but you don't hear this terminology on like within mainstream media, the way that we've heard like white supremacy being like this, you know, it's the biggest terrorism ever and like that. Those are the talking points now you hear on like mainstream media, but they're talking about people that don't have any political sway, they don't have any influence and anything like that, right? So it's like a complete reversal. We actually have a head of state, which is openly like, you know, have the policies that he do, Netanyahu, but you'll never hear him being accosted in that capacity in mainstream media because they control that, you know?
And it was Trotsky that really popularized the racist term, I believe, which if you interpret it as just acknowledging that there is some differences between races and cultures, you know, it's not necessarily a derogatory term, but like he says, they're clearly Jewish supremacists, and it's so overt and in our faces, but all we ever hear about is white supremacy, which is just totally an inversion of the reality.
Yeah, that's right.
And here's Benjamin Netanyahu's embrace of far-right extremists may seal his fate, so you can play it through.
Yep.
He's teaming up with the far-right ultra-Zionist Kahani party, and this guy was a total Jewish supremacist, and this is, they're creating an alliance. Netanyahu sparks outrage with a racist party.
And he's Mayor done that Kahani. Now in this upcoming election cycle to like Klingon or something?
Yeah, this election. Yeah, okay. He's teamed up with him and with the Zuhut party who wants to rebuild the temple now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ultra-nationalist politician, served one term in the Knesset, far-right political groups, blah, blah, blah. But again, you won't hear this in mainstream media, really. I mean, a couple of headlines maybe, but again, not hammered the way that you would see, for example, the attack on Viktor Orban or Salvini in Italy, for example, right? They call them white supremacists, but they call them dangerous far-right nationalists and stuff like that, populists.
You know? All these nationalists are basically Zionist agents. Salvini and Bolsonaro and Boris Johnson, they're all like saying, ooh, as soon as I get in, I'll move the embassy. So it's kind of just like, you know, they're agents of Zog, really, when it comes down to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know about Salvini. Is Salvini like really pro-Zionist, is he? Is he hardcore?
Yes.
That's too bad.
And then Menachem Mendel Schneerson, the Rebbe, supported Kahani on many issues, including the Arabs taking their land, building settlements, incorporation of Jewish law into Israeli policy. And after Kahani died, he was assassinated. Schneerson remarked, "One of the greatest Jewish leaders in history has fallen." He later blessed Kahani's son to be successful in fulfilling his holy father's work.
Interesting.
Are you a racist? Of course not. But there is a basic difference between Jews and non-Jews. We are God's chosen people. And if the Jewish leaders don't like that, then they can burn their local Bibles. But don't burn Kahana.
Since its founding in 19...
Perfect American English, too, by the way. Is he living in America?
He's from New York.
He's from New York. Okay, there you go.
1948, the Israeli Zionist state has projected a carefully calculated media image as a paradigm of democracy and human rights. The reality beneath the image was far different, however. The Jewish religion is founded upon the Talmud, a sacred Jewish book that declares that non-Jews, known as goyim, are subhuman. This has always been Judaism's orthodox view of non-Jews, and this attitude was enshrined in the Israeli state, where Palestinian civilians were massacred with impunity by the Israeli army. However, thanks to their friends in the Western media, the Israelis were able to put a propaganda cloak over these massacres to disguise the racist contempt the Jews felt toward non-Jewish Arabs. This veil of alibis and illusion began to be penetrated, however, with the rise in the Israeli state of a New York rabbi from Brooklyn, Meir Kahana. Kahana was the embodiment of all that the Talmud teaches. He was vicious, sadistic, and racist, characteristics he shared with all Israeli government leaders. But Kahana differed from them in one key respect. He was honest and forthright about what Judaism actually stood for. He openly admitted that it was the Talmud, Judaism's holiest book, that gave the Israelis the right to murder, to hate, and to subdue. Finally, the mask was off, and Judaism could be seen for what it truly is.
Yeah, that's good. But...
Kahana called the man a dirty Arab. Kahana often refers to Arabs as dogs.
I want to make it clear to those dogs that are standing there, there is no such thing as an Arab village in the state of Israel.
It gives us greater strength. And it's not going to be long before we have the power to clean this place out. And that's where I want them out.
Many Israeli soldiers make little secret of their support for Kahana, as do some of the settlers.
If I were the settlers, I would rampage through this town and put the fear of God into these Arabs.
Right, and he inspired Barak Goldstein, who massacred the Muslims praying in the mosque in Hebron. Purim.
And so remind me again, so that guy is still in politics and still behind that
party? No, he died, but his party, the Koch party, is they just teamed up with Netanyahu.
Party.
Yeah, Koch party.
All right, here we go.
Here's the West Bank settler. They have this mentality.
All right.
Supremacists.
Just Gentiles have a place in heaven, yes or no?
Yes, 100%.
So they have a place in heaven, right? And is there a difference to someone who's Christian or Muslim, or does it matter what kind of Gentile they are?
No. If they're doing what they're supposed to do in their role of, like, helping me to fix the world.
Our goal is worshiping them as God's chosen people and serving them.
Standing. If the Jewish nation has an important part in doing that.
Standing. If the Jewish nation has an important part in doing that.
Saving Jews' life. I mean, what are we talking about in terms of righteousness? Are we talking about people who save Jews? Are we talking about people who are just keeping seven archive laws? What are we talking about?
Which kind of slave are you talking about? Who's living to benefit another group, right?
The punishment if you don't follow the Noahide laws and worship them as God's chosen people and help them usher in their messianic era is decapitation in the messianic age.
Yeah, if you just obey, then sure, you'll go to heaven. Don't worry about it. You'll go to heaven. Just obey.
Okay, so it's people who save Jews, obviously, I assume you're going to say yes. Let's just take people. No, they didn't save Jews. They're just nice, good people.
They have why did God give us the seven Noahide laws?
Nice, good people who are keeping seven Noahide laws, good people, sure.
Will they just go to heaven?
Why not?
What about atheists? Throwing that in.
Atheists go to heaven. Yeah. So depending on how do they conduct their lives? Somebody who is an atheist that hadn't known that...
An atheist that keeps the seven Noahide laws.
Yeah. Oh. An atheist that keeps the seven Noahide laws. That's interesting because one of those laws is to believe in God. And to believe in the Jewish people as the chosen nation.
Believe in them as the chosen nation. So
Right. Yeah,
and to not criticize them. They consider that blasphemy to talk about their God, their God's chosen people, so you can't criticize them.
Yeah, and, don't mean to reiterate things, but again, for newcomers, the symbol of the Noahide laws is the rainbow, right? That's the symbol of that, and that's why Noah saw a rainbow. It led him to the land right after the flood, essentially, and so that's why you're seeing the planting of the rainbow flag in all these countries, especially around the West right now. But it's a symbol of subjugation, is essentially. That's why, again, I don't know if there's some kind of alchemical esoteric thing tied into this trans issue or something like that, but it seems to transcend gender. I wouldn't be surprised if some kind of plot to be part of
it. Coincidence, all the big companies changing their logos to be rainbows.
Right. Yeah. it just feels like it's tied in somehow, some kind of alchemical or It's for the Gentiles essentially to adopt that.
Funny, they talk about the group that believes they're chosen by God, and that we're goyim cattle basically and inferior to them. All we ever hear about is how we're the supremacists. These people that wear the collar bracelet are in Congress talking about white supremacy. We need to shut them down and label them terrorists.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, look at what they actually believe.
Yeah, and what they actually can say and stuff like that. They're political leaders. They have billionaires, business people, politics. They're in positions of influence and power. People that they usually are attacking for being these dangerous white supremacists are people who they don't hold any power. They have different beliefs than the liberal world order is trying to impose, and that's it. Anyway, we'll continue here.
No institutional power or like KKK or Nazis. That's a joke.
Feds, exactly. I mean, come on.
Every person in the world has to keep the seven Noahide laws. Every person in the world has to think why he was put in the world and explore the reason he's here.
Think why he was put in the world?
To serve them. We're born to serve them is what they believe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And explore the reason he's here.
Oh, that's fine.
What, if there's a God, if there is a God, what does he expect from us?
I see myself as more special. What does more special mean?
No.
What meaning? explain to someone who doesn't understand, in the religious meaning, which is what? I think I have a greater mission, common destiny. My mission is more important.
We all are created in the eyes of God. We are all created, as but as you know, as the Chumash, the Bible says, the Jews are the chosen nation. So you can't exactly consider that when you're, there's testimony from Hashem that we are different. So it's not my opinion, it's Hashem's opinion.
It's God's opinion. Now, do you know what the Ask Project is? They just go around and like talk with people like... I think I've seen some of the early videos.
He's a homosexual Israeli that's secular, and I had him on the show and did a little interview with him. But just any question you want to ask, you like send him an email or comment, and he goes out and asks him and gets some amazing clips and sound
like
bites.
In Israel, specifically.
In Israel. Right? He asks questions to Palestinians and to Jews.
Okay, interesting. All right.
I just happened to follow Hashem.
After Jews, if he doesn't act like a Jew, he is not considered. The Torah tells you to kill him.
If you have to.
Kill him, yes. Of course, there are Jewish law. According to the Torah, I am saying. Turn it up?
Yep, I'll turn it up here. Sorry, I just lowered it to you so we could hear your narration.
I know.
I respect you.
Oh, no.
Doesn't have to respect you.
Huh?
Doesn't have to respect you. That is the right thing. Are you Jewish? Do you want to honor God? That is the godly thing to do. We respect one another.
The godly thing to do is to kill you.
The godly thing is to kill me.
That's right. That's what the Torah says.
The Torah says to kill us.
The Torah says that people who worship idols such as yourself, when there is a Sanhedrin,
to kill us.
Yes.
Okay.
And there is a Sanhedrin now, right?
They have started back up. Yeah, they're asking Trump and Putin to help them rebuild the temple and to enforce the Noahide laws. And he's just talking to Christian street preachers, calling them idol worshippers that deserve to be killed in the Messianic age when the Moshiach comes.
That's right. And of course, they have the big gold menorah is already in place. What was it? It was like 20 million or something that it was worth or something ridiculous. It's in a big glass casing outside. I have all these parts in place now, ready to perform the first animal sacrifices in the temple, essentially, the Sanhedrin.
That's what the Torah
says. So we know how the Jewish people feel about Christians, yes? That you Christians discriminate against Christians.
Christians are idol worshippers.
You discriminate against Christians.
The Torah says that Christianity is idol worship.
Let me ask you.
You worship three
let
gods.
Let me ask those both.
It's funny because you hear like from MAGA people and stuff and they attack Islam, Muslim for being like irrational and the Quran is, you know, just, I'm not saying that's untrue, but I'm just saying they never question Jews and the Talmud or anything like that in the same way. Do you see what I'm saying? It's like
Judeo-Christian values, man.
Right,
don't
right.
Be racist.
Exactly. And it's like, oh, the Quran is crazy. It's just like, well, it seems to extend across the region, to be honest.
Who is telling you? You have to make a choice. Either you're 100% with a Kadosh Baruch Hu, or you're with the rest of the garbage of the world. Right now we have almost 8 billion people in the world. 99.999% of them are reshaim gemurim.
What is it? Do you know what that means? Like garbage?
Or something like that. Okay. Idol worshippers.
Oh, okay. Now, do you know who this guy is? Is this another
supremacist rabbi. Okay.
Christians, almost 2.5 billion of them, all idolaters. What do you think? Kadosh Baruch Hu thinks they're tzaddikim?
Surely you know what the Talmud states, and this is Rebbe talking to Ariel Sharon. Why they are called Jews? Because they reject idol worship. And Torah tells us that idol worship means anything foreign to the Jewish people. So they reject it.
Yeah.
Just for the Jews, the Creator gave him a way of life. And the non-Jews don't have that. They missed out. Just for the... Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Creator gave him a way of life. And the non-Jews don't have that. They missed out. This is the last
one. No. Okay, explain.
I see Jews as the chosen nation.
Okay.
They were chosen by Hashem.
Does that make Jews better?
Makes Jews different.
Okay.
Like, it's not all the...
It's funny because you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of like when this like the Atlantic or something or some paper they go to like some KKK member and they say or you know it's been on these like big media like NPR or ABC or something they go to this like a Ku Klux Klan meeting or something and like well, what do you think about people who are different skin color? You know, well, they're different. You know, they're not like us. And they, you know what I mean? They're like rolling these people out like here's the most ignorant people in our society. But again, this stuff that you're showing here, this is not stuff you'll see on the evening news compared to the other stuff. You know what I'm saying? You have to have an independent guy walking around and asking random people in Israel what they think, you know?
And this is a West Bank settler. So this is the guy that is protected by the Israeli IDF that's in the little islands in the middle of the Palestinian state that they have to live with.
Right.
This type of supremacist Jewish mentality.
Interesting.
All of our body parts are the same. They're all the same parts of the body, but there's the mind, there's the heart, there's the foot. They're not all the same. They're all part of the same body.
Then Mustafa said, "But I am not a Jew. I am Muslim. Is this rabbi of yours concerned also with me or only with the Jews?"
He's also concerned for the life of every human being, because in the theory of Judaism itself, all of humanity is like one organic human being. The Jews are the heart of that human being, but the body also is important. So to say that he's concerned for the totality of Jews also means that he's concerned for the totality of mankind. He occupies a position vis-a-vis the good of the whole world.
Very interesting, right? And it's like, well, why? Well, because it says so in this book right here. You see this book? Here it says it right there.
Too. We're all the same body, but we're the heart. You know, without the heart, you know, you wouldn't survive, basically.
I mean, and we do hear that from prominent Jewish leaders. They're talking about being the moral conscience of the world and things like this, right? That, yeah, the heart, the compassion, the morality. Mm-hmm. Sorry, repeat the last thing you said. I was cutting over you.
Trump says they're the light unto the nations.
Yeah.
It's the same mentality.
Same thing, exactly. Yeah, same message there.
The nation of the Jews, that the Jews should have more rights than the non-Jews.
Like, give me an example of a right that a Jew should have that a non-Jew shouldn't.
Right now, there's a right for Jews to come to Israel and to get your citizenship, which isn't for all non-Jews. This is the land for the Jews. All the Jews could come and live here. I think that Jews should have more rights than non-Jews. I think that the Jews should get land here, like the Bible says, that each Jew, when Yeshua came with the Jews to Israel, each one got his own plot of land. So I think that each Jew should get his own plot of land, and non-Jews shouldn't.
Good. Well,
Trump's giving it to him. Trump is capitulating to this belief.
Yeah, the obviously the upper end of the bell curve right here.
What about the ones who are already here?
There's a lachak issue of having non-Jews in Israel. There's what's called the gir toshav, someone who has, if he keeps the seven laws.
Yeah, I keep repeating this.
Bnei Noach,
the Noahide laws.
Then he could live in Israel.
Muslimim shem sham.
What happens to the Muslims? The Muslims will find the true place that they deserve. Wherever they are supposed to be, they will be. But they will have to leave the entire area that belongs to us and go to the area that belongs to them. You took their home. You massacred their villages. It is written.
It's written.
When the Messiah comes.
When the Messiah comes, yeah, exactly.
The temple will be built. And all the non-Jews will have to serve us. It's written by the prophets.
Where is it written? Yeah, in the prophets or by the prophets. Interesting. Okay, let me turn the volume back up here. I think this is English. Thank
There's
you.
There's only
that.
A couple more.
Oh, no worries. Yeah, thank you for subtitling that or translating that for us too, Adam.
Sir, faith. Peace? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's not my rule. It's Gemara. It's Torah.
No interfaith peace.
Nope.
And then here's the yeshiva teacher saying that, oh, we need to bring back slavery. The Arabs want to be our slaves.
Interesting. It's creative deficiency. Yeah, go ahead. If you want to read that.
I'll read it.
Yeah. You want to back up?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
He hasn't got a good part yet. I'll read it.
Okay, you got
the next
it.
One. With the help of God, slavery will return. The non-Jews will want to be our slaves. This is a rabbi, head of Sons of David Religious Seminary. The most prestigious, being the slave of a Jew is the best. They must be our slaves. They want to be slaves. It's for graduate of military prep schools.
Wow.
Most well-known and most expensive, most of the students are former soldiers. Instead of just wandering the streets, foolish and violent, harming each other. Sounds like Ben Shapiro. Now that his life begins as a slave,
masters give him meaning. They're giving him a meaning for the first time. Yes. It's something that benefits the world, right? Anyway, I'll continue here.
The slaves are the Arabs. This is not accidental. It's biological, genetic. People around us have genetic problems. Ask any average Arab where he wants to be. He wants to be under occupation. Why? Because they have genetic problems. They don't know how to run a country or anything. Look at them. Look at the state of them. And now some students. Who believes the Holy Temple will be built in the next few years? What is currently in the place of the temple? Al-Aqsa Mosque or Al-Aqwa Mosque. What will happen to the mosque? It will be destroyed. It will disappear. Have you guys ever met an Arab kid?
In the past year.
Past year. Where did you meet the Arab kid? Near the temple. Did you speak to him? No, he pushed me and left. Oh, sure. What happens you meet an Arab kid? What do you feel? Anger. I feel like I want to kill him. What happens when you meet a Jewish kid who is not religious? I pity him because he's secular. He was not born religious because he has missed out on something. Because he's not on the right path. What do you think Jerusalem will look like 10 years from now? It will be full of religious Jews. The Arabs will be slaves for us. What they teach the children. Look, the rabbis are laughing in the back.
Yeah.
A bit before, the Arabs will die and some of them will become slaves for us.
Oh, jeez. All right, just your average little, you know, what is that, elementary school right there? The kids?
Nikki Haley says, yeah, the young kids. Now, number one priority of the deal of the century is Israel's security, because correct. Their lives matter more than Goyim lives.
I tell you, Nikki Haley has been the, oh, Jesus Christ, it's just like,
Defender of Zion Award recipient.
Yeah,
like
Kufi or what's it called? Yeah,
In opinion, one Jewish life is worth more than 10,000 non-Jews, and that's what a guy on a birthright trip said.
Right.
And Netanyahu is going to Moscow to update Putin on the Trump plan.
Oh, interesting.
Avi Berkowitz, Secretary Davos, and there's a report that the Middle East peace plan, this deal of the century, is about to be released. It reportedly has a one-state solution, according to some leaked drafts that some said are part of this plan. Are you aware of any parts of this plan? What would you say about it?
I'm aware of some parts. I've been in touch with some people in Israel. And actually, I think it's probably the best plan that has ever been put forward. I hope it's going to work. I hope that, I'm sure Israel is going to embrace it. Like you say, it's recognizing historical facts that, you know, Jerusalem was always the capital of the Jewish people and the Jewish people belong in their homeland, and really helping out the Palestinians and the Arab world to realize that we want their good, we want a future for them. But they have to understand that the only way it's going to happen is if they're going to stop using violence and terror to achieve their goals. So I think that actually...
Stop defending yourself. What are you fighting back for? It's just not good for you. Just lay down and roll
stop
over.
Stop fighting back for the land that we stole from you because we believe God gave it to us.
That's right.
Helping them with finding jobs, finding opportunities. And
yeah, we'll offer you some jobs. Here's some jobs.
And looking for a better...
Well, we took your land, but have this
slave.
Job.
The future is really the way to solve the problem.
Jobs for you, William.
Yeah.
Are you able to give me any preview of anything in it? You said it's a great plan. What is great in it?
I think that the main idea is really showing care for both sides and understanding the security for Israel.
Does that mean a sovereign state for the Palestinians, for example?
Nope, it's not.
No, but, no sovereign state.
But
no.
I think you'll hear it once it's going to be announced. When it comes to the Palestinian issue, I think that Russia, again, has an historical connection with the Abbas, with the Palestinian people. But I believe and I hope that if a peace plan will be put forward, especially if they'll engage Russia in it, I think having Russia part of it and Russia joining it, I think is going to give a lot of reassurances in the Arab world. And I hope this is going to bring forward a solution.
All right.
So Putin's going to be instrumental in his view, and this is Putin's Chabad Lubavitch rabbi.
Interesting. Lazar, yeah. So do you think there is a schism between some of these guys, like the Ashkenazi and the Russian portion, the Russian Jews?
Or like... Not the Chabad as the Russians. Maybe the schism is between the Sephardic, like Ovadia Yosef, and the Chabad Lubavitch, but I mean, maybe they have minor differences, but just, you know, they agree on the vast majority of things.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you for pulling that together for us and for translating some of those clips, too. I appreciate that. we are going to wrap up here in a little bit. Any closing words, Dan, in terms of this rotten peace deal that we've been that they've been presenting here? Any closing thoughts on all of this?
I think I got it all out. Thanks for having me on and going through my OCD clips that I threw together.
Oh, no, it's great. Yeah.
Give people the truth about this stuff.
Whoops, sorry, that's too loud. Here's some clips from today, then. Palestinians violently rioting as they react to the peace deal. This is just kind of breaking from earlier today here.
This is what a win-win solution looks like.
This is a win-win, that's right. Turn that up a little bit.
This isn't rioting. It's not like Antifa, you know, breaking windows and stuff. They're just basically yelling, like, you know, I don't know what they're saying, but
yeah, a couple of fires. All right, they're upset. They're angry. Understandable reasons. A couple articles came out about this, too. Palestinians angrily reject Trump Middle East peace plan. Palestinians reject Trump administration's Middle East peace plan. They had, of course, rejected it even before it was presented on the press conference today because, well, for one, for the very fact that they were not part of developing it, that they didn't have a single representative there. This is kind of a no-brainer. But again, how this will be spun in the world media as well. Look at this. Israel is offering them another chance. They wanted to do all these nice things for them. I want to give them jobs and, you know, do good things. And they just don't want to because they're violent, violent people. That's how it'd be laid out in media, I think. But we'll see. Oh, boy.
The ADL approves. They just tweeted, ADL is a staunch supporter of the Jewish and democratic state of Israel living with security at peace with its neighbors. So,
of course they did. Let me
ADL name of approval.
Is it under ADL News? Let me see. There's a couple.
It's just that's the gist of it. I don't know if you want to show it.
Yeah, I do want to show it. Let me just see here.
I noticed there was another interview with Kushner too. I don't know how long it is or what he says, but I'll take a look at that afterwards.
Okay. Yeah, ADL is a staunch supporter of the Jewish and democratic state of Israel, living with security and at peace with its neighbors. Is that when you drop white phosphorus on them or after? For decades.
I love showing the chutzpah of their lies after just showing an audience like all of the supremacy and how they don't want to make a deal and it's all a Chabad Lubavitch fraud with Kushner and Netanyahu.
Yeah, of course. No, ADL is a dishonest organization that's peddling in hate to make money and to help underline and drive through their agenda of what they want. That's why they're continuously also attacking people who are not even remotely ethnocentric on the same level that we've seen demonstrated in today's show, that can just be like, well, we, you know, our stance doesn't, is not founded on hatred for others, but for love and concern for our own, and that we need to look out for our own interest. That's enough for the ADL to label some of these individuals neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and dangerous terrorists, essentially. I mean, Greenblatt is he's a lying snake. What else can you say about him? I mean, he does things that benefits Israel. He does as a complete hypocritical when it comes to like advocating things which are beneficial for Israel. And then if you have people that even again, not even 10% of, you know, the things that we've seen today, they advocate for American interests first or European countries' interest. This organization goes on to label as extremists and dangerous and shit like that.
He's a mafia gangster thug with a red Kabbalah bracelet.
Yeah, that's right. He was at a lot of these people were, of course, when Trump moved the embassy to Jerusalem as well. A lot of these people lined up and they were all in attendance and stuff like that. It's amazing. For decades, ADL have been a strong advocate for Israeli-Palestinian negotiations, leading to a two-state solution that ensures a secure, equitable, and lasting peace for both parties. All this is just empty bullshit words. It's like as rotten as a movie script performed by actors who are below par. Anyway, we could go on here, but yeah.
I had a dream. I interviewed Greenblatt a couple nights ago, and I was like really grilling him, and like he was flustered and stuff. That would be wouldn't that be something? They never refute any of the stuff we say. They just smear us and try to get us deplatformed.
Yep, and that's it.
Kicked off the payment processors.
That's it. They don't engage. They just smear. They lie and they defame. And mark my words, one day people are going to wake up, and they're not going to take your lies anymore. They're not going to swallow it. They're not going to accept it. They're going to see what you're doing and your disgusting hypocrisy. Keep pushing. Keep doing what you're doing because you clearly think that that's a winning strategy. you're going to see other things here moving forward in the future, especially when these kinds of things happen, where it's just the blatant, hypocrisy doesn't even explain it. This lies of just like self-serving, but then they still somehow have managed to convince themselves that this is doing what's best for them or for our enemies, or, you know, it's disgusting. Adam, tell us, bit about No More News. Give us a little plug on the new t-shirts that you have out as well.
NoMoreNews.org, KNOW, and you can find the YouTube, BitChute, DLive, ways to support and donate and contact. The new shirt is the They Live theme.
I pulled that up there. There we go.
Trump shirts. You got the little, you can see it's got the little hexagram in the eyes, the nice little lapel, the lapel Israeli flag. And then on the back, it's,
Say? Cool.
Wake up with No More News.
Nice. Yeah. Cool.
Available,
man,
on the website.
All right. Nice. Very good. Yep. They have it right there, guys, on the right hand side. Check it out if you want it. And of course, there's other ways you can support Adam as well. Check under the donate profile. He is on YouTube for now. He is
on
BitChute.
I'll get you back on to sneak you back on campus.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, YouTube is burning itself down completely, but, you know, it'll take a few more years before it's completely migrated over to a new platform, but I think it will happen. I do have, was that, say again?
Going to go on BitChute.
Oh, this here, you mean? Yeah. BitChute. We've live streamed it to Twitter, VK. I'll put it up on Library. If you want to put it up on YouTube, you can, but, you know, I don't care. It's fine. But you're welcome to do that. No problem at all. Well, Adam, thank you so much, man, for coming on. I'm going to just quickly go through and give a little nod to the people that sent some diamonds and stuff on DLive, but you don't have to persevere through that.
Thanks for having me. It was a powerful show.
Yeah.
Thank you as always, and I'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, my friend. Take care, okay?
Take care.
All right. See you later. Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. Mute Adam there just in case he doesn't jump off the call right away. All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us. Hope you enjoyed that. It was kind of a lot of stuff that we've been going through, but I think a lot of good portion was dedicated to just how ridiculous this peace deal is, and we'll see what the spin is going to be in the media. But again, I think that they are going to put a very, very different spin on this and say that it's something good, but we'll see. You know, you never know. So guys, let's wrap up a couple of DLives here that I just want to give a nod out and shout out to. Thank you to everyone out there for donating. If you're donating on DLive or wherever, it does help us out as well. But of course, if you do want to check out the work that we do, one of the best ways to do that is through the members website, redeyesmembers.com. We have exclusive member shows there. The second hour of most of the interviews goes up there exclusively for members as well. We do make other kind of shorter exclusive videos as well, but that's really the best way, redeyesmembers.com. Then, of course, if you're unable or don't want to or can't or whatever, check out redeyes.tv. Everything is always free there. Check out the TV section specifically. We do outtakes, of course, from Weekend Warrior occasionally as well. Just put up two from the latest one we did Sunday, one on the founder of The Base, who was, after all, a confirmed Fed, just as we guessed in the previous Flashback Friday that we did when we went through and talked about that. But check that video out. And then we did an update on the coronavirus as well. Those are just uploads that came up here, of course. But you can watch us live on Fridays, 5 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Central European time, either on DLive or through our website, redeyes.tv/live. We also multicast to VK and Twitter as well. And then, of course, Sundays, as we said, we do Weekend Warrior, and then in between, in the rest of the week, we do interview shows, we do shorter videos and stuff like that, in case you're new to everything that we're doing here. Of course, we were kicked off of YouTube not too long ago, about 3 months ago. We're not back on there and don't intend to go back on there either. We were kicked off of Facebook as well, so we're still on Twitter, though, so we do utilize that platform. But otherwise, there's a lot of other social media that we are on. Just check the description down below and you'll have all the links if you want to follow us there. Definitely Telegram is a good option, although they've begun censoring now as well, unfortunately. But for now, there are you can circumvent it in certain ways. But anyway, guys, let me just give a couple of shout-outs here at the end. DF Williams donated a diamond on DLive, no message. Thank you, Boondock, a diamond, no message. Pyrus 777. said, we did diversity equal strength jingoism. When did diversity equal strength jingoism begin? It's got to be like 90s, I think. 80s and 90s. Anyway, thank you, Pierce, for the diamond. Boogie Thrime, a diamond. Boog soon, please. Not sure what boog means, but thank you for that. I appreciate that. Bandit 001, biggest load of bullshit I've heard this year. Probably speaking about the peace deal. Thank you, Bandit, for that. Boogie Thrime again, a diamond, no message. DF Williams, a diamond, no message. Pierce 777, another diamond, no message. Ron Shekelson, a diamond. He says, we are the, where are the reparations for Holodomor survivors? Well, there isn't any, right? In fact, even Abe Foxman, when he was the previous head of ADL, went specifically to Ukraine to have a meeting with the current, there was the chocolate king, as they called him, the manufacturer of the chocolate down there that had become president, obviously due to corruption. He had been elected president or prime minister, I forget which. They had a meeting, and then Foxman tells him to avoid terms like Holocaust or, I don't think he advised him not to call it genocide, but he made it real clear that the Holodomor and the tragedy that happened in Ukraine, that that's not overshadowing in any kind of capacity the Holocaust during the Second World War. So they're covering for that. Anyway, thank you, Ron, for that. Hoboken Slav donated a diamond. Ivanka should have married Tom Brady. Is that some sports ball guy? I recognize the... Is that some football or something? I recognize the name. Pierce 777, another diamond, no message. A lot of lemons from people and ice creams. Thank you to all of you. I'm not going to shout out all of you. We'll be here all evening. But thank you guys so much anyway. I'm going to open the chest here as well. excuse me. Thank you to everyone joining us today. I do appreciate it. We're going to wrap up here in just a moment. Again, Flashback Friday is coming up, of course, on Friday. But we have a show by the Lawn I just recorded with the Plaid Army, two Canadian guys. So that's pretty good. I think we'll put that up tomorrow. So look out for that. And then, of course, we have more things in the on the conveyor belt, if you will. We have some shorter videos and we have some other interviews as well. But yeah, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Thank you to all of you who lasted with us here for about 2 hours and 50 minutes. But I think it was worth it. Well analyzed. Thank you to Adam as well, of course, for staying with us for that long. Guys, take care. Stay strong. Keep fighting and keep exposing all the lies and keep pushing the truth, and you know that we'll head in the right direction. Thank you, everyone. See you later. Bye.